It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. Brian X. Chen from the New York Times, Georgia Dow from iMore, ZDNet's Ed Bott joins me. We have lots to talk about. Of course, the iPhone X. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it worth the money? The Animoji breakup. There's problems in poop land. We'll talk about gadget stratification and try to solve the big problem Facebook poses. It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 639, recorded Sunday, November 5th, 2017, anywhere but Albany. This Week in Tech is brought to you by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software that's used by over 10 million people. Try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/twit. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you looking to hire a tech professional? With ZipRecruiter, you can post to 100-plus job boards, including social networks, all with a single-click screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/twit and using the promo code TWIT at checkout. And by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter TWIT. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we get together with the best tech journalists in the biz to talk about the week's tech news. This is going to be so much fun. From Santa Fe, New Mexico, Ed Bott joins us. You might feel a little left out, Ed, if you don't have your iPhone X in hand.
You know, it's still on the truck, I guess.
Yeah, that's what they told you. Yeah, it's on the you ordered one?
No, I did not.
No, I didn't think so. Okay. Right. Ed Bott report on ZDNet. He's, of course, famous Windows tech journalist, but I think you cover everything now. And you certainly don't have a Windows phone. Did you go Android?
At the moment, yeah. I have a 7 Plus here and a Galaxy S8 Plus. So
Pretty good. But we're going to get you a little bit better because also here, Georgia Dow from iMore, and she's holding Renee Ritchie's right now.
Yep, stolen.
Squeeze it
tight.
It's
always the best. Both of us have stolen phones.
Yes, I stole mine from my wife. Georgia's moving, we just found out. She actually went to Renee's to do the show, which is nice. And Renee's lurking somewhere behind you, isn't he?
Yeah, we'll see him every once in a while.
Okay, if he ever wants to, you know, if he's listening and he says, I have something to say. He did a great, he did a 10,000-word review of the iPhone X after having it for one day. That's impressive. That's a lot of words.
He writes without even thought.
I know. Well, no,
he can just write effortlessly.
I wouldn't say that.
Amazing. And, it's innate to him. He's thinking.
A first-timer. I'm really thrilled to have Brian Ten Chen. Oh, I'm sorry, X Chen. Yes. He is. You'll be Brian Ten Chen for this week. He's, of course, lead technology, consumer technology writer at the New York Times. 6 years. I didn't realize you'd been there that long. That's awesome. There's his 10.
I do have the iPhone X on me.
Yes.
I mean, 10. Sorry.
You must, of all people, must have the most difficulty calling it the iPhone 10.
Yeah, I had problems with Mac OS 10, too. I used to call it OS X all the time. And I got yelled at by all the Apple digerati or bloggerati. So, yeah, iPhone 10 is a little bit hard for me.
It's hard for everybody. It's kind of a weird thing. By the way, I loved the way you reviewed the iPhone X in the New York Times. The iPhone X is cool, wrote Brian, but that doesn't mean you're ready for it.
it's kind of an arresting headline, right? Yeah. You read that, and then you have to click through, and you'll see what I mean when you get through the first few paragraphs of the review. You know, it's not that the iPhone X is bad. It's not. It's the best iPhone ever made, But my point being that I think that a lot of people who aren't really used to having abrupt changes in technology probably aren't going to want the iPhone 10, right? The home button's gone. The way that you turn on the phone is gone. Like everything is totally different. But I think, you know, there are plenty of people who are technology enthusiasts who embrace change and are just cool with it. I think it's fine for them to spend $1,000 to get the iPhone 10. I think it's great.
I'm actually curious. You wrote your review November 1st. When did you get your iPhone 10?
So I got it. So what day is today? So I got it on Monday, and we had it till Tuesday for the embargo to lift. But I chose to take one extra day just to spend some more time with it instead of. It's like if I was doing it within the first 24 hours, I would barely even get to use it. I had to spend more time writing and polishing, and it just wouldn't work out. You know, it'd be like writing an infomercial in some ways. No offense to anybody who did pull it off and did a fine job doing it in 24
everybody
hours.
Everybody else did it in 24 hours because, of course, you're going to get clicks. So,
right.
I'm curious what Ed bought, because you've covered this for a long time. Apple really did something, I think, unprecedented this time around. They gave four iPhones. They've done that before. In fact, with the original iPhone, they gave out four to David Pogue of the New York Times at the time, Ed Begg of USA Today, Walt Mossberg of the Wall Street Journal, and Stephen Levy, who was then at Newsweek. This time around, four went out, but three of them, actually all of them really went to web properties. Stephen Levy was the only one of the four who got one. And weirdly, those four got them a week ahead of time. But weirdly, Stephen's embargo ended Monday and everybody else ended Tuesday. Ed, is that unusual?
Well, that's highly unusual. I can't remember anything ever like that. I know with other devices, you've had, you know, some people get longer term units, other people get shorter term review units. But to have things arrive with one day's notice for the majority, especially the established media outlets, I mean, that's just basically unheard of for me.
And then there were some very well-known people who were a little upset, like the Wall Street Journal John Gruber of Daring Fireball, who has always been an insider for his coverage of Apple, didn't get advance units. Brian, it is unusual to have a phone. I'm actually proud of you that you delayed another 24 hours. There must have been pressure to publish right away, right?
Hey, thank you. I mean, I did want to spend an entire week with it. Ideally, you know, typically when you get these phones, we spend a week. But my editor pointed out that if we waited a week, we would have missed Friday. That's when people are deciding whether or not they want to get in line and buy this thing. So we had to put it out before the iPhone even came out. It gave me some extra time. I didn't really catch too much more than other people. I did catch a bug with the Amazon app that froze the phone, and that wasn't Apple's fault. It was just the thing I was pointing out was that I didn't know how to turn the phone on and off because the controls were very different with the new iPhone.
There's definitely a learning curve.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's definitely a learning curve. I think people who are very good at technology or just very sophisticated with it are going to pick it up pretty fast. They're going to like Face ID versus Touch ID. They're going to be used to the home button pretty quickly. But there are a bunch of weird things, right? Like the battery indicator is gone in the corner. Did you notice that for the percentage?
Yeah, you have to slide it down to get the control panel to see the battery life.
To turn off the phone, it's not even the power button anymore. You hold the power button and the volume button at the same time.
And don't hold them if you hold them too long, SOS goes off and it starts going whoop. That scared the hell out of me the first time.
So my point was that, you know, I feel like it's the first iPhone where people are probably going to have to read an instruction manual. Whereas I feel like for the past decade, I've never read an instruction manual for an iPhone in my life, but now I have to.
I think Apple was fairly bold with this. I hate to admit it. It's very nice, but there is some question about why they gave Mindy Kaling a phone and then so she could write about it in Glamour. She gave a 12-year-old developer, Alex Knoll, a phone so he could show it on Ellen DeGeneres. They gave Ina Fried a phone to review on Axios, but they also gave Axios's political journalist, Mike Allen, a phone, and he had his nephew, who was apparently an emoji expert and a freshman in college, review it. This pissed John Gruber off, by the way. No end. It was interesting. There is some speculation. I mean, look, it's Apple's right to do this. There's no, it's not, right. there ain't no law. But it, some people speculated Apple might not have wanted the people like Brian and longtime tech reviewers to have too long with his phone. There was some concern that maybe they were hiding something. I think it wasn't they were hiding something so much, although if there are battery issues or screen burn issues, we may still not know for a few days. But I think maybe what they wanted, and this is, I think, reasonable speculation, is they wanted the reviewers who only had a day to focus on what's new, the new screen, the new Face ID, the Animoji, and have their reviews be all about that, because that's all you could cover. And you really didn't have time to do anything more in depth. Is that manipulative, Ed?
Well, I mean, the very notion of handing out review units to a selected number of outlets is, by its definition, manipulative. Yeah. And it's Apple's right. It is absolutely their right to behave in their own best commercial interest. So, you know, their job is not to serve the needs of the journalistic community. Their job is to sell phones. I mean, I think to a certain extent, the audience for this phone is self-selecting. This is, I mean, because of the price, number one, and because of the feature set and the amount of work that you had to do, you know, in terms of staying up late and not making a mistake in typing or clicking to get your order in, it was self-selecting to the kind of technology enthusiasts who were not going to be dissuaded by a lukewarm review anyway. So I think they said, you know, what we really want to do is get this out there to people who can show it off, the web-based properties, rather than the sort of older mainstream media, that it's much more important to actually have people demonstrating the features than simply talking about the specs and how something works.
I think that it was a really smart move for Apple, because they're giving it out to people that are probably going to be a little bit more enthusiastic, or, you know, a lot of us reviewers are getting a little bit jaded. Maybe it will be very spec oriented and what the phone can do and what it can't do, instead of how much fun it was to use it and how I enjoyed it. And this is something that was really innovative and interesting. And it also broadens the audience to areas where usually they may not even think about a phone. So I think it was smart that they gave it to new, different people. And it also changes the water a little bit.
It's smart, but I feel like it does a disservice to end users who are not going to have as much information as they might like.
But you don't have to have the review in 24 hours. That was people's choice to put them out, and there'll be more and more reviews that are going to come out. Yeah. A lot of people that would have a phone, you know, that would have it for a lot longer to be able to review, they'll still have reviews that are out. And the phone is expensive enough that I think that people are going to think about it, unless you are a huge tech enthusiast. And I think Brian said it well. You're going to go through tech shock. If you're not used to changing technology and it makes you frustrated when you have to learn a new interface, this might not be the phone that you're going to want to take a look at until you're really comfortable with it.
Yeah, and I think people, don't misunderstand me, folks. I have no sympathy or concern about whether journalists got it or didn't. I never take review units. I buy the units and I get it if I'm lucky. And it was my wife who was lucky. I got it on the day of the release. Mine won't come for another week or two. But because I don't like to review pre-production units, I don't like to be in the kind of have a relationship at all with the companies. So, and I don't, you know, I don't have a long lead. I don't have a lead at all. I can, you know, as soon as I get it, I can talk about it and continue to talk about it. But I worry that Apple's doing all this to, I don't know, they don't need to, God knows, but
Control the message
more than a consumer deserves. I think a longer review, to be honest, before she orders it.
But who needs to order it on day one or even in the first week?
There are people who've been waiting for this who want it, and they would.
But those
like
are only the going, tech. Those
and,
are only
and
the tech
they were
enthusiasts,
going to order
right?
It,
okay.
Right, or with or without a review.
Okay. And by the way, Okay, that's fair.
There was this pretty smart blog post. Somebody wrote this pretty smart blog post. I forgot who it was, about how the Apple Watch Series 3, the review cycle was just so horrendously bad for the Apple Watch because there was one bug that was caught pretty quickly and fixed pretty quickly. And that took over the entire news cycle for like an entire week where, you know, the LTE didn't work on the Apple Watch.
Right.
And this blogger pointed out that Apple probably felt burned by this. And I think with the iPhone 10, it's just there's too much at stake, right? This is the most important iPhone in a decade. And, you know, to Ed's point, it's in their commercial interest to control the narrative.
Of course. But if there were a showstopper, if there were a showstopper on the level of the LTE issue on the Series 3 watch, no one would have known about it.
You have a 30-day return policy.
Okay, all right.
You know, no questions asked. 30 days, boom, you give it back. But anybody who's buying it in the first day or week even month better be expecting that there are going to be some issues. Even the best case scenario, there's going to be a half a dozen annoyances that are going to be fixed by at least one or two, you know, point updates to iOS in that time. That's just the way it works. The real testing doesn't happen until it gets in the hands of real users on real networks out in the real world.
Well, the good news for Apple is we have a number of data points. Of course, Apple's own quarterly results came out the day before the iPhone X shipped. And they say they had amazing sales of iPhones. The iPhone sold 46.6 million units in the fourth quarter. Much of those, probably iPhone 8s. So iPhone 8 was a success. And then, of course, Slice, which is an interesting story. I don't know. I'd love to hear whether you guys trust it or not. I use Slice. Slice is an app that monitors your Gmail to see of its customers, and there are, I guess, millions of users, monitors your Gmail to see if your delivery is coming and when it's coming. So they have advanced information, admittedly a sample, but I think a fairly large sample size. And they say, according to, you know, their customers, their users, it's the largest product launch in the company's history. This is the graph. The iPhone 8 and 8 Plus, kind of one of the smallest product launches in the company history. But the iPhone 10 even bested the iPhone 6, which was huge because it was the first big iPhone. This, you know, this is pretty significant. Do you, Brian, are those useful numbers, you think? Are these, I feel like Slice is useful.
You know, I haven't been an Apple reporter in several years, so I really don't remember. But are they scanning receipts or something in emails? Is that how it works?
Yeah, that's how it works.
I think Apple has disputed those metrics before. Like, just from what I remember, they don't love them. And I'm not sure if it's because they're too accurate or if they're totally wildly off. But I do think that early orders are definitely a good metric for, you know, early adopter interest and just, you know, like an indicator of whether or not a product is very interesting to technology enthusiasts. You know, I don't know if it really tells us much about the long term over the course of a year.
Sure.
But it definitely is interesting to see the iPhone X and so much excitement over it.
Yeah. Well, I think three out of the four of us have one in our hands. Ed Bott is still using his Nokia 1050. No, I'm teasing. But I wanted to hate this phone. I for the price, for the attention it was getting, I just wanted to hate this phone. I wanted to find something wrong with it, and I can't find anything wrong with it.
So do you use an emoji?
I have sent some. That is not going to be a killer feature, I don't think. I've sent a few. And, of course, our friend Harry McCracken claims to have invented something that is really going to end the world sooner, which is an emoji karaoke.
I don't know if he was the first one to do it.
He claims to have invented it. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know either, but I'll play a little bit for you in case you somehow have missed the excitement of an emoji karaoke. It's actually kind of a hard thing to do because what you have to do is record using the screen recorder because you're limited to 10 seconds. No, this is an ad. Let's see if I can find it.
I think that Renee has an actual how-to on the iMore site.
He does.
Of how to do this yourself. If you so wish to torture the rest of the world with an emoji.
And maybe Renee's found a better way to do it, but what I was told is that you have to use the screen recorder and then edit out, crop out the UI stuff, and then you can, according to BuzzFeed, Harry McCracken invented it. So, and then you can mix it into a, here's Harry's first, or one of his first. So he's got a rabbit and a chicken. I can't stop this. singing.
Oh, that's good, though. That is good.
Singing Blue Swede's Hooked on a Feeling. Now, I just want to remind ASCAP BMI that this is in use in service of news and commentary, not being used for any aesthetic value. Although I think it's pretty funny. So how does Renee's technique, does it, because does he have to, you have to use a screen recorder and all of that?
Yeah, I think he's doing also, yeah.
Yeah. Here's another one from Harry. This is the first one.
My love,
it's Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd. There doesn't apparently exist an Elmer Fudd animoji. It's kind of a limited. Actually, there's some concern about, believe it or not, I managed to find all the negatives. There's a there's some concern about this because Apple, of course, Apple says the Face ID information is stored in the secure enclave, is not available to anybody else. We don't see it. Only the phone sees it. And it does a very good job of recognizing you. I'm actually pretty impressed with Face ID. It's as good as it could be, I would think, in the circumstances. But there's some concern because there is an API for third-party developers to use the cameras in the notch. I imagine Snapchat would be one of the first, right? Wouldn't that be a great way to use get those Snapchat characters, use the notch and do a better job of it? And there's nothing to stop them from exfiltrating that information from the phone to the Snapchat servers. All the information delivered by the notch. So there's some.
So you choose to say yes or no.
You have to approve
to an application. So you would approve it if you feel comfortable with them, maybe knowing how you feel when you look at their app.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And the ACLU and the Center for Democracy and Technology say, well, maybe this is a problem. I don't know. You have to really stretch. You're right. You're right. You have to approve it. ACLU says a lot of things about Face ID. They don't like it. But something to be aware of, senior policy analyst at the ACLU says, you know, a bad guy could, you know, what? Get your face. Big deal. All right. I'm trying to find negatives. I really am. It's not easy.
It's interesting because Face ID misses me when I'm grumpy. Like if I have a grumpy face, it will miss me. Now, and if my hair is in my face, it'll miss
me. You have a choice of having it require that you're paying attention, looking at the phone or not. I would imagine it's a little easier if you don't turn that on. I've left mine on so somebody can't sneak up behind you, and I don't care about that. But
and grab your phone and then have to try to unlock it, not just steal the
phone.
And
all you would have to do is go, I'm grumpy.
All I have to do is be grumpy. That's it. Which I probably would look shocked if someone, you know, smashed my... that would probably be enough to stop.
I have some anecdotal evidence that it does get better. Apple said it would get better. Occasionally it doesn't recognize me. When I was, I did it first with glasses. When I didn't have glasses, it didn't. I entered the code. So then you have to use your PIN. But from then on, it recognized me with glasses. So I have a feeling it's updating all the time.
Yes.
And Apple said it would be. And I think there is evidence it's doing it. Same thing. The studio lighting confused it at first. Not anymore. It gets better. It's pretty impressive.
It's to the point where a brother.
Go ahead.
A brother, you know, did the exact same thing. So they had similar faces, and two brothers unlocked the phone by, you know, having the phone relearn the new face, which was actually the brother's face, which was similar enough for the phone to be mixed up. So there's probably, you know, some updates that will make it a little bit more attuned to that. But it is constantly trying to relearn. Like if I probably do the passcode with a grumpy face, it would probably notice grumpy Georgia.
So when it doesn't recognize you, it asks for the passcode, you enter it, and I suspect it's then saying, oh, well, that was you, I guess. We'll add grumpy to your repertoire. We did try it with identical twins. Megan Maroney, one of my co-hosts, tried her iPhone 10. She had one of her sons, Huck, unlock it with his face and then gave it to Milo. Milo was able to unlock it. This is what Apple said could happen with identical twins, and they were right. So that's a drawback. You can only have one face in there. Unlike the fingerprint, I used to let my wife have her fingerprint on there so she could get to my phone when she needed to. Now it's, I can, you know, I have to give her the passcode. iFixit ran to Australia, as they are wont to do, to get an iPhone 10 so they could destroy it. We had Kelsey from iFixit on the new screensavers yesterday. A couple of interesting things. A, they gave it a repairability score of 6, which is not bad. Better almost than I thought. They found the batteries in 2 modules. It's an L-shaped battery with 2 different modules. And as a result, the logic board has an odd shape and is jam-packed. They figured out it has 3 gigs of RAM. Apple never talks about that, but that seems more than adequate. Of course, it has the A11 Bionic, as we expected. It actually has quite a few custom processors on it, which is kind of interesting. It's got a lot of smarts in here. There's they give the chip numbers, but there's definitely a motion coprocessor in there and some other things. It's for such a tiny logic board, there's a lot of stuff in there. All right. I don't know what else to say. That's the iPhone X. Anything else anybody wants to add? Do you want one now?
The screen is gorgeous.
It is the best screen. It actually, I have it right next to a Note 8, which until now was the best screen I could find. Samsung Galaxy Note 8. And I think the colors are actually more accurate on the iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Note 8 colors look bluer, don't they?
Yeah. They also pop a little bit, right? They're Samsung kind of, even if you turn on Cinema, which is the most accurate, I think, of the choices. I'll give you an example. If I compare these, here, there's the Authy icon on the Note 8 on the left, and compare it to the red of the Authy icon on the iPhone. Now, maybe those icons have different colors, but I would guess that Authy's doing the same thing on both phones. And the red actually feels more true. It's a little bit maybe magenta or pink on the Note 8, and it feels more true on the iPhone. And this is with the Cinema mode on the Note 8. They have an adaptive mode that really pops it, that makes it look wow. And I think that probably Samsung is going to start having to think about OLEDs and say, well, maybe we should make these more naturalistic and not quite so bright. Apple was very quick to point out, now it's an OLED. You guys, you iPhone people aren't used to it. When you tilt it, it's going to get a little blue. And yeah, that's anybody's using OLED.
And does it also have issues with polarized sunglasses?
I think they're using circular polarization on it because I've been told it does not. Brian, did you test that?
So it doesn't have to do with whether it's polarized or non-polarized. I actually had a pair of Ray-Bans that were polarized and worked with Face ID, but I had a different pair of sunglasses that were non-polarized and didn't work with Face ID. And I asked Apple about it. They said it has to do with if the lenses filter out a certain part of the IR spectrum, just that specific wavelength. If those sunglasses block that part of your eyes from being seen, then it doesn't work with some sunglasses, but most.
Because there's an IR light in here. But what about, can you read? I think, Ed, you were talking about readability with the sunglasses.
Right. Yes. When you flip it 90, a lot of devices, when you flip them 90 degrees, polarized sunglasses will basically turn them opaque. So I'm curious whether that's an issue. It shouldn't be an issue on a modern display. But I saw somebody had talked about that.
Yeah, remember that Apple, this is a Samsung panel, but Apple's to Apple specifications.
Yeah. To answer your question, Leo, one of the things actually that I like about this phone is the absence of the home button. That's always been a pet peeve of mine about the iPhone. It seems old-fashioned, the constantly having to press that button and double press to go back to the home screen and all of that. And it's just a waste of real estate that can be used for a display. So I'm probably the opposite of many longtime iPhone users in that I'm glad to see the home button gone. And I think that most people within about a week or so will adapt to whatever UI changes come, because you spend, if you're spending $1,000 on a phone, you're spending 8 or 10 hours a day with it off and on.
I didn't sleep at all last night. Let's put it that way. I was playing with my precious all night. Brian, what's been your experience? Did you get used to the UI pretty quickly?
It took me, I'm still fumbling around a little bit when it comes to using reachability, that shortcut to make the top of the screen come down to the bottom. Sometimes I swipe in the wrong place, but overall, it took me a few days to get used to it. I think I don't miss the home button that much, But there's some things that I could still do faster, like app switching was faster when I had the home button. But I agree with Ed. I think it's about time to get rid of it and just embrace the future, if you will, because I think it's faster overall to not have a home button.
Yeah. I have to say that I agree with you, Ed. The home button does feel kind of antiquated. Even Samsung doesn't have a home button anymore. This is the home button, you sweep up from the bottom, so that's easy. The recents is a little challenging for me, Brian, as well, where you have to swipe up halfway and wait.
And
you can't get rid of an app by sweeping it off anymore. You have to press hold till you just like the, you know, deleting an icon, and then you can sweep away. But
yeah, Apple told me they wanted to make that harder to do because people aren't supposed to do that.
That's Apple for
so
you.
They're discouraging people. Yeah.
We'll leave it in, but you really shouldn't do that.
Exactly.
I use Recents a lot. And, you know, of course, the 3D Touch iPhones, when iOS 11 first came out, they eliminated the best way to get Recents, which is to press and hold on the left side until you get the haptic feedback and then slide over. And I use that all the time to paste passwords in, for instance, from LastPass. That no longer, ironically, it works again on the iPhone 7 and 8. They patched iOS 11 to make that work again, but it doesn't work at all on iPhone 10. And I realize a number of the things we're seeing, UI things we're seeing with iOS 11, the changes have to do with the fact that the iPhone 10 was coming, including that Recents change, which it was a little weird in the beta, but they fixed it when iOS 11 came out. I'll be honest, I don't see the notch anymore. It doesn't bother me. I don't, the UI I'm completely used to. I know it's not faster because it's the same chip. It feels a little faster. I have to say this is a modern phone, and
I thought that I would miss the home button a lot more than I did.
Yeah.
It's easy to use. It's kind of intuitive. I also find that like switching between things, it's a little bit weird. And I often don't know how to like close something at first. I have to like rethink, I just have to swipe again. But I think that I'm going to feel really comfortable with that as well.
The buttons have all changed. Now the power off button invokes Siri instead of, you can turn off the screen and if you hold it, it invokes Siri. And if you want to turn off the phone, which I guess Apple also thinks you probably shouldn't do. You have to press two buttons on either side and hold it. And as we mentioned, the other thing, of course, is don't drop it, because Apple has already said the screen repair is, what is it, 260, 259? And this is without, without the extended warranty, without the iPhone, Apple Care Plus. And every other repair, including cracking the back, would be $500+. So don't break it. Get a very tough, I did immediately. I got a tougher case than my original case with a cover because I'm terrified I'm going to break this thing. Very expensive to repair.
Didn't they include Apple Care Plus with the phone if you purchase it on installment through
Apple? If you do
Apple,
the upgrade plan, I think.
Early right. upgrade plan.
Yeah. That's the one where you get a new phone every time it comes out. But I don't think that's economical. I think you're paying extra.
You're essentially leasing a phone, kind of like leasing a car. You never right. own the phone because you have to give it back before you get the new
right.
one.
Right.
And so you get on this endless treadmill of getting new phones every year. I don't really like it because it seems like rampant consumerism, in my opinion. But I'm sure there are plenty of people who enjoy doing that.
That's why I don't like any of this. And I hate even I hate that we've spent half an hour talking about it. But it is, after all, the premier product from the richest company in the world, and they're making a lot of money on it. A lot of people are going to buy it. If they sold 46 million iPhone 7s and 8s last quarter, they're going to sell that many, I'm sure, with the iPhone 10. Even, do you think the price is, I mean, it's ridiculous, but do you think that Apple people care?
No,
if
you think about how long you spend on your phone in comparison to what you do with any other technology. This is probably the technology that it makes the most sense to spend the most amount of money on anyways.
Right.
Because it matters to you. So I think that most people that already buy Apple products usually are doing well enough or, you know, spend their resources so that they can afford this. And I don't think that they're going to mind. I think that in some ways it being so expensive makes people feel elite and better than others when they buy it, which is a horrible statement of, you know, people in general, but it's probably very true.
What did Tim Cook say about it, Brian? That
he said it's like buying a cup of coffee a day or something for a year, but I think he's talking about really fancy cups of coffee. I don't know where he gets
coffee.
His coffee.
Very expensive coffee.
I get like $2 cups of coffee, or like, you know, I think about coffee in New York and buying coffee from the donut cart. That's what I think about when I think about paying for a cup
I don't
of
think
coffee.
He's talking about you in that case.
A coffee probably. White. Yeah, no, I don't know. He's definitely not talking about that.
This is like a mochaccino with like, you know, cracked corn on top and like, you know, gold flecks.
Where can I get that? That sounds good.
Gold
cracked corn on top?
Yeah, you know, something that only select few would get.
I mean, the flagship models for the previous flagship model for the iPhone and the Samsung flagship are both up around, if you spec everything in there, they're around $900-$950 anyway already. So it's added a couple hundred dollars perhaps. And I think more important than the absolute price is the psychological barrier of going into four figures for a phone.
I think that's exactly it. There's a point.
Yeah, but the actual increase in price, especially if you think, you know, those cameras and the sensors around them are not cheap. You know, a lot of the engineering that goes into the what's inside the phone, you know, when you tear it down there, you know, that stuff's not cheap. And, you know, Apple likes to keep its margins. I doubt that they've increased their margins for this device, but it's just a more expensive product, and they've bumped it up, you know, what is it, 20% higher than the previous model?
I just broke my iPhone.
What? Are you kidding me?
What's that?
What's going on?
So somebody in the chat room said, oh, you don't have to pause. You just go up and swipe to the right, and something strange happened. It's not doing it now.
No, you have to pause.
What's that? What is that?
I have no idea.
Put it on
is.
Dim mode. I'm going to try to do that on my phone and see what happens.
Oh, you know what? It's because I don't have any recents. It did work. So I just need I need to create some recents. Wait a minute, let me create some. That's what happened. I don't have any recents. All right, let me open some apps. Now I have recents. That scared me. I thought, oh my God, I broke it.
Thank God you have AppleCare.
Yeah, I'm sure this is going to work just fine. Forget it. I don't have AppleCare. By the way, don't you know?
I was just bugging you.
I don't buy that stuff. But you know what?
If you
buy it with a credit card, many credit cards will fix it if you break it, right? I don't know how it is in Canada.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think any of my credit cards would fix my... Again, I don't know what consumer...
This you should write this up, Brian. So
yeah, you know, in the past, I've told people not to buy an extended warranty program, and that's with past iPhones, because if you go to a repair shop, you know, like a screen repair, something like $7,500, so it's cheaper overall to not get the extended warranty. But I might have to revise that recommendation based on the sheer cost of fixing an iPhone X. It's totally different.
I never buy it. Now I wish I had, to be honest with you. But some credit cards will give you extended warranty protection. That won't. But some will give you purchase security, including... If you break it, you'll get it fixed. So you should check your credit cards and see if they offer that kind of protection, because that might be a way to avoid paying for all of that.
And you know, I believe that you could.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I believe, Leo, that you could still get AppleCare if you wanted. Because
is it not too late?
Isn't there like 2 weeks that you have that you can purchase AppleCare between that time? And you haven't received your phone yet, so.
Well, this is my phone. We're gonna at least it's gonna take my phone.
So and most of the credit card policies that I've seen don't consider a cracked screen to be a warrant. If it still works, it basically has to be non-functional.
Oh, defect.
So if you break your screen, Ed, what you're saying is then step on the phone a few times so it stops working.
Yeah, really make
run,
sure it's
run over card. It. Run over it once or twice with the car, and get yourself
tip.
A good and get yourself a good story, because you're going to have to swear to that, you know, under penalty of perjury that's exactly what happened to it.
So according to creditcards.com, there are four different things a credit card could do: extended warranty, purchase security, price protection, return protection. Some cards offer all four. The purchase security can replace, repair, or reimburse cardholders for damaged, lost, or stolen eligible items purchased with that credit card. You have to file within a specific time, typically 90 days after the incident. There may be caps from $500 to $10,000, and there can also be an annual reimbursement cap.
Might be that it will only deal with if it's over $500 worth of damage.
Or whatever. But you should check with your credit card and see if they've got anything like that. You know what? I might buy AppleCare because this is such an expensive phone to fix.
Right.
I think in the past. By the way, if you updated to iOS 11 and you can no longer type the letter I, Apple has a fix for you.
I've been having this problem.
Have you?
Yeah, I've been sending that weird A thing to a million people when I ever type I. I'm like, what am I doing wrong here?
Brian Ten Chen, Apple says if you type the letter I and it auto corrects it to an A with a symbol, it's a simple fix. You go to Settings, General, Keyboard, Text Replacement. You add a new replacement. For the phrase, you type an uppercase I. For the shortcut, you type a lowercase I, and it's all fixed.
Or they could just update the software.
This is such an Apple bug. It's so weird. There was a bug briefly because of the time change. You know, in the United States, we just went off daylight saving time. And unfortunately, it stopped working. But if you asked your Apple Watch, your Series 3 Apple Watch, what the weather was, if you asked Siri, it would crash. But that's fixed now, unfortunately, because I'd love to do that for you. And I'm just curious if the iPhone X has the calculator bug that we talked about last week. That's where if you type too fast, the calculator thinks 1 plus 2 plus 3 is 23. Yeah, it's still there.
So, huh.
That's an animation bug.
That is weird.
Yeah, it's not if you're very slow. Oh, still doing it. Wait a minute. 1 plus. You have to wait till the animation stops on the plus. And then you get the right answer. But if you don't, you don't have to do it super fast. It's kind of dopey, frankly.
Get your $1,000 back, man.
My advice, if you're doing your taxes this year, don't use the Apple calculator because you may either over or underpay. It's unclear. And whatever you do, don't use the letter I.
Renee gave me a tip that it's fixed in beta.
Yes, somebody told me that too. The 11.2 beta or whatever it is.
But if you're doing your taxes on your Apple
calculator.
There's probably already. You should do that on.
Do it on a computer.
Do it on a computer.
Just don't use an Intel chip for the rounding error. All right. No, that's old. That's old. Ed and I remember that. Remember that, Ed? Intel made a processor that couldn't do floating point math.
The floating point bug. Sure, that was a good one.
It's not the first time there's been a problem. All right, what else? I just want to make sure we cover all the iPhone 10. I don't have any pictures of me in a brassiere. Maybe you do, Ed? So
I've heard about this, but that was not related to iPhone 10, though. That's an iOS.
That's Apple Photos. It's not even a bug.
Apple Photos.
It's an Apple Photos feature. They categorize so you can look for dogs, but somebody figured out you can type in brassiere, and if there are pictures of you in a brassiere or of just brassieres in general, those will show up, but so will abacus and zucchini, but not underwear, boxers, nude, but brassiere, bandeau, bra, bras, those will all show up. Eggplant? Yes.
Yeah.
But you have to have a picture of eggplants.
Yes. Yeah,
I don't have any pictures of me in brassieres, or I don't think we're eggplants.
I think it's a feature, if you have photos
you
of you
have
that
every category, right?
Well, no, it can't have every category, but also if they have pictures of you in a bra, then at least you can find them and delete them before you give your phone to, you know, your mom or something like that.
It
just makes it a little easier to find what you have to delete first.
When I read about this, I actually tried it just to see if there were any pictures
you
of
put
me
your,
in a bra.
Did you wear one, or did you just get photos?
That's a good idea. Oh, I'll go home and do that tonight.
I remember the show where you were just with the trees. So.
Yeah, I was naked. I ordered a bra on it was one of my Kickstarters, was the Joey bra, which is, but it didn't fit.
What's the Joey bra?
It let you, I think you could put ID. It had a pouch, like a Joey, like a kangaroo baby. It had a pouch in the bra.
That's pretty useful. That's just a good idea.
I've ordered such stupid stuff on Kickstarter. I actually need to be kept from Kickstarter because I've actually ordered stuff that just no human, like the floating bonsai tree.
Did you ever get the floating bonsai tree?
I did, but this was actually a great disappointment. The impression I got was that you would actually get a bonsai tree.
But, yeah.
Yeah, no. You have to bonsai not included. what I got, well, I'll show you, actually, because I can. The nice thing about Kickstarter is all the humiliating experiences you've had buying things on Kickstarter are always available. So, a lot of this stuff hasn't come yet. Air bonsai. So it wasn't cheap, 200 some bucks. And you kind of get the impression, if you look at the video, that there is a bonsai involved. But what you get instead is a rock that floats. And then you put the bonsai in it. But, of course, the bonsai unbalances the rock. So you then chip off pieces of the rock to make the bonsai balance.
Oh, this sounds like it's going to end poorly.
Yeah, it's in a closet somewhere. Anybody wants it, I'll give it to you free, no cost.
Floating rock.
Floating rock. The rock does float. I think adding the bonsai, or even watering the bonsai could cause problems.
Even if it was a fake rock. Bonsai. It's the new pet rock.
That's what you need, a fake bonsai. Why didn't I think of that? A plastic bonsai. That at least wouldn't change its shape or grow or anything like that.
You wouldn't have to worry about killing it.
So sad about so many of these things. I don't even want to look at it. Like the robin. I ordered it. I bought that, this.
It's a Radiohead song you've got there, isn't floating, it? Fake plastic bonsai.
Fake plastic. Sounds like it.
fake plastic trees is, of course,
like
the
many
original,
of the Radiohead songs, it's totally depressing.
Yes.
Do you remember that when they had kindergartners draw pictures listening to Radiohead? And they were the grimmest pictures you ever.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, that was awesome.
You should include that in your study somehow, Georgia. There's something in there for you. All right, let's take a break. We're done. No more iPhone 10 talk. Okay, so those of you who have been plugging your ears for the last half hour, it's over. You don't have to think anymore. I'm going to talk about a lovely company located in beautiful Canada that does a wonderful thing. They did a wonderful thing for me way back when. When I was a freelancer, I flew to Canada, did a call for help, remember, up there at Rogers in Toronto for 1 week a month. And, of course, then I would have to invoice them. Oh, that was fun. The worst part of my life was end of the month when I have to fire up Microsoft Word and Excel, and I have to figure out what I spent, get all my receipts. And the big problem was I had to convert to Canadian dollars. It was just a – then Amber said, no, Leo, there's something new. And it was just starting up. I'll tell you, this was 2004. It was Web 2.0 at the time. FreshBooks. Here we are, like 13 years later, over 10 million people use FreshBooks. And it is the easiest way to send invoices. But more than that, because it turns out, if you do invoicing with FreshBooks, if you track your expenses with the FreshBooks app, if you track your time and projects, and when you get paid, and all of that stuff happens automatically, turns out, that's accounting. Without doing accounting, you're going to get all the information you need to know, for instance, what you spend, what your expenses are, your profit. A lot of freelancers, I was one of them, had no idea till tax time, did I make money this year? Well, you'll know every moment. Just go to your FreshBooks dashboard at FreshBooks.com. You're going to send professional-looking invoices. It takes seconds. And because they have every invoice has a pay me button, you get paid on average 11 days faster. That is fantastic. I mean, that is just amazing. In fact, clients like it. Turns out clients don't like paying invoices any more than you like making them. You can even set it up to have recurring invoices. If your clients agree recurring payments, you can reward prompt clients and encourage customer loyalty by automatically adding discounts to your recurring templates. You'll know what you did. You'll know when you did it. You can bill for time by client, but also by project. You can have different rates for different projects and services. The FreshBooks app, which is awesome on iOS and Android, you just press play on the app to track your time or do it on the website. It will sort the time entries chronologically in the invoice. Just put them right in there so It's completely documented. You can even add future unbilled time entries to recurring templates. So even though you haven't done them yet, you know it's going to happen. You just put that in the template and it's automatic. I love it. Receipt attachments, you take a picture in the iOS app, they go right into the invoice. And you can, your employees can log into the FreshBooks mobile app for iOS, and it's easy for them to take care of business too. Great. See those nice people? Those are the great support staff. FreshBooks has a fabulous support staff in Toronto. And because they're Canadian, you know they're nice. They really are. They're very sweet. I love FreshBooks. No wonder they were included in the Forbes Small Giants list of 2017. You could try it free. FreshBooks.com/twit. If you see on the form, how did you hear about us? Please do me a favor and put This Week in Tech in there so they know. FreshBooks.com/twit. And a tip of the hat. Thank you, FreshBooks, for saving my life back when I was still freelancing. And now I can afford an iPhone 10. It works. So now, Brian, are you going to fix your eye problem? You actually had that. I was trying to make it happen. It didn't happen to me.
Sorry, which eye problem?
The one when you type an I? No, when you type an I and you get an A.
Yeah. Yeah, I should have fixed it during the commercial break.
That was your opportunity, dude. Your chance.
Stop sending people this weird alien language of A, whatever.
Was it like a weird, what was the symbol? It was like a weird.
I forgot. It was just a symbol I've never seen before.
Yeah.
I loved that you thought it was your fault, not the phone.
Of course. That's how it works in technology.
Like, must be typing the letter I wrong every time, and now it's auto-correcting.
Right.
It's alien language.
That's the strangest thing. Jeff Bezos, he's very wealthy, the wealthiest man in the world, sold a significant portion of us. It must be nice to just say, you know, I'm going to sell some stock for $1 billion. He's typically sold stock periodically over the last 6 years, 900,000 to 1 million. He owns 80 million shares. In May, he sold almost $1 billion, but now, thanks to the fantastic results, Amazon stock is up year-to-date 48%, shares up 18% since September alone, making not only Jeff Bezos the richest man in the world, but kind of a nice little payday. He wants to put about $1 billion a year into his space project, Blue Origin. And I imagine the Washington Post is draining some of his income as well. I have to tell you, I have to read you this, even though it's not strictly speaking accurate. This is fake news. Jeff Bezos, you know Amazon's looking for a new headquarters.
Yep.
Jeff Bezos' heart breaks a little reading Albany's Amazon headquarters pitch. You ever been to Albany, Brian X. Chen?
I have it. Tell me about it.
Cringing as he scanned the section touting the city as the economic and cultural core of New York State's capital region, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos reportedly felt his heart break a little while perusing Albany's pitch to host the company's new national headquarters, sources confirmed Tuesday. Oh, geez, he said. You could tell they put a lot of work into this sad presentation. They even provided a concept sketch of our headquarters across the river from their little Amtrak station. The package included a custom-made SUNY Albany Great Danes football jersey with Amazon written on the nameplate and laid out the many ways a new $5 billion campus would benefit from being situated nearby such landmarks as the New York State Museum and the Egg, a performance center the proposal referred to as iconic. Bezos said, it talks about how the Port of Albany has one of the biggest grain elevators in the country or something, and they keep calling themselves the next Tech Valley. God, I don't think I have the stomach to read this section about how much we'll love their tulip festival. At press time, Amazon reportedly received an addendum to Albany's proposal, noting they're optimistic that United Airlines may begin offering flights between their city and Detroit within the next year. It's the Onion. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
Well, and it is clear that whoever wrote that has been to Albany because I've been to Albany,
you know,
a couple times doing little projects, and it's a great place to it's a great place to jump off to Vermont or the Berkshires or basically anywhere but Albany.
Anywhere but Albany. Amazon's founder, despite his
further.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, faster. Wait a minute, stop it. No fake ads. Thank you, Bloomberg. I hate that autoplay video. I don't know. Thank you, by the way, Brian. The New York Times has yet to do autoplay video on its site. Thank you.
I feel like I've encountered that before on the New York Times website.
Have you?
I'm not sure. I'm just going to not comment.
I might have spoken too soon. Hey, we all got to make a living, right? Somebody asked Bezos, well, what about philanthropy? Bill Gates famously, remember Ed said, I'm not going to do it until I can spend enough time to do it right, which I thought was great. Zuckerberg has famously thrown money at Newark that didn't do anything and so forth. And, of course, now Gates is, doing philanthropy full bore. But the chair in computer science and engineering at the University of Washington, the Bill and Melinda Gates chair, Ed Lazaska, says Jeff is probably not quite ready to step down yet. And this is a guy who, like Bill, is fixated on changing the world in important ways. It's a full-time job giving money. You have to imagine he'll be every bit as philanthropic as Gates. But not yet. I think that's fair. I'm sorry. I'm not coming up with anything good for you guys to chew on. I apologize. Have you seen the calculator on iOS? Never mind.
Let's see some animated poop emojis. And
I've done one. Ryan, have you done one yet?
The animated poop?
I have.
Yeah.
Of course. That's like the first thing I did.
First thing you do.
Well, I'll give a shout out to somebody who's not on the panel today. Joanna Stern's video review of the iPhone X is all emojis, including a lot of poop.
The whole review?
The whole review is done in emojis.
Well, we got.
It's really brilliant. You know, she does very, very good work, but
I love Joanna.
Above and beyond. There you go.
Yeah, she's been on this show many times. We've actually trying to get her back.
From launching an idea.
Hey, Matt, this is an ad. Sorry. Yeah, just to talk amongst yourselves while we watch this pre-roll. God, it's bad enough that we got the ads in the show, and then you got to watch pre-roll. Here we go. Oh, my God.
How did she do the back emoji?
She's walking down. I've never seen the back of the poop emoji.
I'm a piece of crap. This iPhone X is far from it.
Oh, that's cute.
It's the best iPhone in years, but it's also the most changed. At first, it can be pretty darn confusing.
So for those of you listening.
I'm here.
And me. And me too.
There's real video, but they've superimposed emojis on the heads of Joanna and her commentators.
And we're going to show you the biggest changes to the iPhone.
That's a unicorn.
Plus tricks for getting used to them.
How long?
It's like the emoji movie, but better.
Before we stop using
these. That means more screen.
Very soon.
Yay.
Very soon.
It's one of those features you use once, right?
I wouldn't say once. I would give it like a few months, and then we will really hate them.
I've talked to two people who are on the fence about buying the iPhone X, and once they tried the Animoji or once they saw or received one, they're like, "I'm going to buy an iPhone X." So it seems to be the most like.
Can I have a list of the names of those people? Because I'd love to just sell them.
Well, I just want to delete them from my contact list because I don't want to get any messages from them. There are very limited Animojis. I mean, you only have 7 or 8, right? There's an alien and a unicorn and a cat and a dog and. I mean, pandas. It's not poop chickens.
I think Snapchat has some masks, too.
Snapchat, well, that... and
the chicken's good, yeah.
I don't know if Snapchat is yet using the... what do they call that in the notch? What are the array of...
The infrared camera?
Yeah, all of that stuff in there. It's basically a miniature Microsoft Kinect. By the way, Ed, wasn't that funny that Microsoft intentionally, I think, announced that they were killing the Kinect the day the iPhone X came out?
You know, there's never a shortage of irony in Redmond. It's like the irony range of the United States. So yeah.
Yep. RF2020 in our chat room says the emoji thing is the saving grace of the iPhone X. It's playful.
Playful. It's cute. It's playful. I think that you're only going to use it for so much. Like maybe, giving really bad news through like a chicken might be easier than, yourself being there.
I saw that one of the video reviewers, I think it was a High Snobiety on YouTube, used it to send a breakup message to his girlfriend.
I was about really to rough. Say, there's,
that's cold.
That's harsh. That's cold. It's cold. Was it the robot? That's what I want to know.
On the other hand, you're pretty much sure that after that one's delivered, you're not going to get a, hey, take me back, baby. Come on.
That's final.
Because now they're questioning why they dated you in the first place. So I guess in some ways it makes you feel better.
So I'm just looking at Snapchat. It doesn't look any different. I wonder at some point Snapchat's
cute.
It's going to probably use the Face ID, but it's not doing that yet.
Okay.
In fact, it's strangely positioning stuff out of the that. But this, I mean, imagine this is the next thing they're going to do.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Straight down on stage.
I'm sorry, I'm distracted. I've turned into the Blue Man Crew.
No, you did promise. I want to go on record here as saying you did promise before the last break that that was it.
I'm sorry.
That was Snapchat. It wasn't really the iPhone 10. It was Snapchat.
Go away, Snapchat. Go away. I'm done with you. Got to keep you honest, Leo. No, you're right. I promised. And I don't know. We got the Joanna Stern. We started doing emojis, and then it was all over. Kindle Oasis. Oh, the new Kindle is here. Sure, that's got to get everybody excited.
Seems like bad timing to put out that review, huh? that review embargo come out the same day as the iPhone 10.
Did anyone even read this article? I'm just saying.
I actually bought this. I like the Kindle, but I know that I'm...
But Leo, you buy everything.
I know.
It's not a fair statement to say that.
I know I'm one... it's completely been superseded.
I didn't even know that people really used Kindles now that you could...
I don't think anybody does.
You know.
It's waterproof.
A lot of people love Kindles, the grayscale Kindles for the immersive experience.
It's like reading a book.
And it's very, very, very easy on the eyes in the way that a transmissive screen isn't. What I found, if I can pivot from that just a little bit.
Please do.
What I found interesting this week was some data on tablet sales that showed that Amazon is now up to, I think this is IDC's data, that Amazon is now well up over a 10% share of tablet sales. And so they've been steadily, very, very steadily growing. You know, they were in the 2-3% range 2 years ago, and now they're up in the, you know, the 10-15% range. In a static category, that's even more impressive, because, you know, this is not a rising tide that's going to lift all boats. So, you know, there's a real temptation to look at the new device that's going to sell, you know, 50 million units per quarter, and to poo-poo some device that's only going to sell only 1 or 2 or 5 million per quarter.
That's really true, isn't it? Yeah.
Those make a tremendous impact on the lives of people. And I think Amazon has been very focused and, you know, it's done a great job of engineering these things, and they're succeeding in the marketplace while nobody's paying any attention.
Should point out, though, that after years of falling iPad sales, Apple reported an increase in both Mac, iPad sales, as well as, of course, obviously, the iPhone. So the iPad is coming back. Maybe that new iPad Pro, the 10.5-inch. Go ahead, Brian. I interrupted you.
Oh, that's okay. I was just clarifying. So, Ed, you're talking about touchscreen tablets, right? Not the Kindles themselves. So the Kindle Fire.
That is correct. That's why I said I'm pivoting from this. But yeah, this is basically the devices that are replacements for cheap PCs.
Yeah. And the remarkable thing about Amazon's strategy is that their Kindle Fire costs as little as something like $50, right?
So inexpensive.
And that's kind of insane, considering it's a touchscreen that can play audio and stream Spotify and do pretty much everything we want to do on a tablet. Granted, it looks crappier compared to an iPad, but for $50, you know, you're going to buy this for your kids and let them destroy it for Christmas, right?
And if there were any doubt that the Kindle tablets are really loss leaders for Amazon, they offer a $99 kids edition that's coated in rubber, but that they promise for 2 years, if it gets broken, if the kid breaks it, they just give you a new one.
That's pretty amazing.
For 2 years. Well, I mean, obviously, either it costs $10 to make or it's a loss leader. They don't care because you're going to buy so many copies of Phineas and Ferb and games and so forth that make
yeah,
more
you're
money.
Right. They have said on the record that it's a loss leader and that they don't make money off the hardware. They make it off selling you books and games and all that stuff.
Yeah. And apparently they're doing a great job because the Kindle's Fire sales are going. Is the Kindle Fire TV selling well? It's in the market against Roku and
the
Apple
Fire
TV. Yeah, the Fire TV.
You're talking about the stick?
Yeah, or well, stick? Whatever. I mean, is that the only kind, only form factor now?
They make a stick, and they make a stick, and they make a box.
They have a box, right? Yeah.
And they're both available in 4K models now. And I think it's the same thing. I think they're under the radar compared to a Roku or Apple TV or even the game consoles that do similar things. But for the people who are Amazon's absolutely most valuable customers, the people who spend big bucks in their ecosystem, it's a, you know, welcome to our living room.
Yeah.
You know?
I think there actually is kind of a stratification of the gadget market. You have the people who are willing to spend $1,000 on a smartphone and have to have the latest and greatest. And then the majority of people, the vast majority of people who aren't looking for the shiniest new thing. They're very price sensitive, and for them, a Fire tablet and the Fire TV are priced right. Fire TV is $40. The stick and the box is like $60 and does everything that they want, and they're happy with that. And that for them, that is the latest, greatest technology. Yes?
Absolutely.
I agree.
It's easy for us geeks and enthusiasts to forget that we're in a tiny minority.
Well, the thing that Apple has been extremely successful about is to concentrate on the segments of the market that have the highest profit.
Right.
And, you know, those are the highest price tags. They're people who are not price sensitive. They can maintain their margins and they'll leave the rest of the market to, you know, a variety of Asian manufacturers and to some PC manufacturers and to companies like Amazon, which are not going to make money on the hardware, but can often find a way, as Amazon has done, to build a very creditable revenue stream from the ecosystem around the devices.
You know, I think it's kind of funny because I think in a lot of ways, that's why people that do not use Apple products, they really can, there's a lot of hatred towards Apple and Apple products because of, you know, how they're kind of priced high. And I think that always talking about how it's the greatest and magical, I think that there's a lot of backlash because of the same marketing that it works very well and it's very successful at. But I think that same success has created a lot of people very angry about us covering Apple, talking too much about Apple. It kind of takes more of the piece of the pie. And I get a lot of Apple hatred from people.
Is that Renee's dog? Whose dog is that?
We don't have a dog.
I have three dogs here.
Oh.
I'm sorry. And we've had people coming. One of them is actually in my office right now. Lucy is here. And she wants to go. She wants me to go over and let her out so she can bark at whatever the other two dogs are barking at. We're dog sitting someone else, and I think someone just came to the door. So,
no problem. I don't know why I blamed Georgia.
The dogs are angry about Apple.
I just looked Pardon like me. The easiest person to blame, Leo. You can be honest.
You look like a dog person, frankly.
I do have a dog, though. I do.
Where is your dog in this move?
Well, I'm going to be bringing her with. I'm going to my mom's house for a while.
Ah.
And I won't have any internet.
Are you going to live in the basement?
That's a true statement, yes. I really am. We've already moved all the stuff in. We've moved all our stuff to my mom's house. We're going to be living in the basement for 2 weeks with no internet. I'm going to go through some serious withdrawal.
Oh, my goodness.
This is when a Kindle would be a good idea.
Yeah. I've been really avoiding a couple of stories here. The Facebook Russia story, but I guess we have to talk about it. The great poop emoji feud. It all comes back to poop. We've had way too much scatological commentary.
Well, then you'll have to throw the hamburger emoji scandal in there with
well,
it.
That's a good one. That is a good one.
Well, and we had a taste test, by the way, yesterday. We made hamburgers, Google, Facebook, and was it Apple, the other one? Apple style on the new screensavers. And then we were blindfolded. Megan Maroney and I were blindfolded, and we tasted them. But I called foul because, first of all, Megan doesn't eat meat.
So did she eat the hamburgers?
They made veggie burgers, but I don't think that's a fair test. And then I don't know.
The emoji for a veggie burger is actually the same as the poop.
It's a little, that's kind of my attitude on it. And then I don't know what kind of lame cheese they used, but I couldn't even find the cheese with my tongue or tastes or anything. It didn't taste like there was any cheese on it. So but Megan won because I got them. And actually, I think, what do you tell me? When you have three choices, you shouldn't get all three wrong, right? I mean, statistically, you should get 1.5 right, right? I got 0. I got them all wrong. Megan got 1 right, so she won.
Statistically, you should get like 1 in 3.
Yeah,
right? You have three
at
choices.
Least 1 in 3, right?
You would think.
Well, let's see. It's 1/2 × 1/2 × 1/2.
Well, each time, actually, you get 1 in 3 chances.
Let me get the apple.
It doesn't actually...
That's right. 1/3 times 1/3 times 1/3. Yeah. Let me get the Apple calculator out.
There's just separate. See.
It's 24. Yeah, that's a bad joke. All right. Well, we'll save all those exciting stories for a moment later. There are weeks really where I wish I just didn't have to do Twit. We could just go home. And say there was
no, it's a dry show.
There
I hear
was
you.
No, news. There was nothing happened of interest. The chat room.
There's no
anything,
big scandal.
Well, there. I mean, I don't know. I guess we could go on about Congress talking to Facebook and Twitter and Google, and I can't.
Yeah, I mean, nobody ever gets excited about that stuff in the chat rooms.
Well, our chat rooms. I don't know what they're talking about. The hearings are well. Okay. You can fill me in because I can't. It's like I couldn't even bring myself to read the transcripts, let alone watch it. And then the New York Times, your journal asked 9 experts how to fix Facebook, but these were very smart people, and I think mostly they said, I don't know. There's no, it's I don't know. No,
it's a lost cause. You can't fix Facebook.
It. Somebody called me today. This is an interesting thing. He's 51 years old. He said, I'm embarrassed to admit it. I never did Facebook. So I joined it last week. My son's overseas, and I wanted to see how he was doing. And so I joined Facebook. He said, Facebook, he did not put a, interestingly, not put a profile picture. Or if he did, it was a random profile picture. Facebook shut his account down briefly and said, we won't reopen your account until you send us a photograph of yourself. And then, so he did. He said, it has to be a clear, full-face picture of you. So he did. And then they said, okay, we'll get back to you. And then like a day later, they unlocked his account. The thing that I'm reading between the lines, tell me if I'm wrong here. It sounds like Facebook would know if it was him or not from the photo. But he was never a member.
No, they just wanted...
They wanted to know what he looked like?
They wanted a proof that there was not a computer algorithm that's just spitting these things out, that somebody was actually going to get this message and respond to it and do a minimal amount of work. But look, the thing that came out, 200 million fake accounts on Facebook. That is the, as Jason Kint pointed out, that would make it the 7th largest country in the world, and would mean if you got all of the fake accounts on Facebook together, they would outnumber all of the real accounts in the United States. So you know, there really is a problem here. You know, and
this is ironic because Facebook always gave the impression that we have a real names policy, you know, you can't use a fake name, you kind of have to be real. But apparently they didn't care. I guess they care now.
That's BS. No, that policy was always BS. What they wanted was accounts that looked real. And what the real name policy tended to do was punish people who had legitimate reasons to preserve their anonymity or work under a pseudonym, people who were, you know, being harassed by an ex, for for example, or people who or transgender people who had changed identities and and changed genders, changed names and such. So the whole real name policy became a great way to harass anyone who was different. But it did, as my late cat could tell you, it is very easy for someone to create a fake account and have it still available on Facebook.
Wait, your late cat has a Facebook account?
She still has an account, and it has her picture on it. You know, I mean, I've kept it there. It's been there for, she died 5 years ago. That account's been there for about 10 years. It's almost as old as Facebook is. And no one from Facebook has ever come to me and said, you know, sorry, this isn't a real person. You're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to shut this thing down. And it, you know, and she has lots of friends on Facebook who are cats.
So is it Facebook that said there's 200,000 fake accounts or somebody else?
200 million.
200 million.
Yeah.
Did Facebook say that?
Yeah.
And who is making all these accounts?
That's a very, very good question.
And why? What do you get? I always wonder this with Twitter, too. Now, Twitter initially said, I love this, that they had only found 200 Russian spam accounts on Twitter. That number went up a little bit after a while.
I believe that the number that Twitter finally copped to was 16 million fake accounts.
But we know because Twitter's like half fake, right?
There's 10 real people that use Twitter.
That's it.
And half of us are in this Twitter. Room. Yeah.
Me and Professor Jeff Jarvis.
Yeah. No, he's not. He's fake. He's fake. We know he's fake. So, Congress was not completely thrilled by the testimony. And by the way, Mark Zuckerberg didn't go. Everybody sent their corporate counsels to testify. Mark said he was very busy, but actually somebody posted a picture of him and his wife and his children. Let me see if I can find it. This is what Mark Zuckerberg was doing instead of testifying. Well, he has a lot of good Halloween costumes.
I don't have a problem with that. Putting the CEOs in front of Congress is a great way to punch them in the face.
Right.
That's what happened to the tobacco companies. That's what's happened to the oil companies in the past. You know, you bring the CEOs in, and then all the congressmen go down the line and they take turns punching each CEO in the face.
It's kind of grandstanding, isn't it?
Of course it is.
Yeah.
But if the purpose here was to gather information, then arguably the counsels, the legal counsel is closer to understanding the issues there. However, they are trained and their job is to obfuscate the truth and to present as narrow a picture as possible. So what really should have been there, and it should have been interviews with the staff of the congressional committees, was the staff who are actually working on these features.
If you want to get to the bottom of something, you don't do it on TV.
But I don't know. I think that really what it's about is accountability. And in the end, the people that run the companies should be accountable to what happens there. And I think that if there was more accountability, then they would be much more careful that they were doing things on the up and up. And they can't say, well, I had no clue that this happened. I think it was Al Franken that asked, you know, well, how could you not, you know, you deal with so many data points and how could you not tell, account and they're paying in like rubles, like that doesn't maybe mean that there's something up between this. And so I think that it would be a great idea to have people be accountable for the companies that they run so they can't hide behind and be able to say, well, you know what, actually, I didn't know.
Well, I want to take a break, but when we come back, we'll talk about some of the solutions proposed and what you guys think, Facebook and Twitter and Google, can do. It's not merely, I mean, a lot of it, and what the Congress is interested in is Russian meddling in the 2016 election, but it's kind of a larger issue about who is on Facebook. What is going on? If Facebook has that many fake accounts, it's interesting. Anyway, I'd like to know your thoughts. We're going to take a break, come back with more. Ed Bott is here. It's always great to have Ed, the Ed Bott Report at ZDNet, at Ed Bott on the Twitter. What do you write about at the Ed Bott Report? Anything you want?
It's anything I want. It has been a lot of Windows 10 lately because there's been a lot of activity on Windows 10. But I've written a lot about Apple and Android technologies in the past as well.
It's the end of the line on the free Windows 10 upgrade. We'll talk about that. And the new Surface. And Microsoft's new direction, I think, with Surface. It's also great to have the wonderful Georgia Dow. She's a senior editor at iMore and works as a psychotherapist. So I always like having her come in here for a brief consultation about this crazy world of ours. And thanks to Renee Ritchie for letting you use his studio. It's very nice to have you.
Thank you.
And for the first time here, and I'm sorry that it had to be this show, but I'm glad you're here, Brian. Brian Tenchen, lead consumer technology writer for the New York Times. We'll get you back when there's better news, more interesting. Actually, we're going to find some stuff to talk about in just a second.
Hey, it's not a bad one. I love talking about poop.
Damn it. Who doesn't? Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're looking to hire, if you've got an opening at your company, you're probably already thinking, well, am I going to have to go to 100 job boards and post my one by one? I mean, what's going to happen? Then they're going to all call me and my phone's going to be tied up for weeks. No. I've got so much of a better way. ZipRecruiter. Well, you post once to ZipRecruiter. They cross-post to 100-plus job boards and social networks with a single click. And then you don't get any phone calls. You don't get any emails. But that's a good thing. You will get applicants, lots of them, almost right away. 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within one day. But those candidates go into the ZipRecruiter interface where you can scan them fast. You can even write screening questions, yes, no, true, false, multiple choice, even essay questions to eliminate candidates you're not interested in. Their resumes are pre-formatted, so they all look the same, so it's very easy to scan through them. You can screen them, rate them, and hire the right person fast. And with ZipRecruiter's smart matching technology, they'll actively notify qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting. They'll actually go out, they'll push your post to candidates. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, they don't depend on the right candidates finding you. They find them for you. You even get a head start in the interview process with the screening questions. You don't have to waste time going through a bunch of resumes, and you don't have to answer the phone or get your email box filled. It really works. It's the smartest way to hire. Right now, you can try it for free. Businesses of all sizes, some of the best businesses in the world, more than a million businesses use ZipRecruiter. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit and try it out for yourself. We've used it. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. One click, and the candidates start rolling in. We've been talking about Facebook, and is the whole story just Russian interference in the election, or is there a larger story here? A larger concern.
Oh, God, there's a much, much, much larger story, which is about the nature of reality and the nature of truth. I mean, we can...
The fake news story.
Well, yeah, but fake news in a much broader sense than you think. Think about it in terms of commercial speech with all the really crappy ads that are in there. And people just... The way that Facebook has designed its algorithms is it rewards engagement, and engagement scores tend to reward people who are most willing to manipulate the facts of a situation. So it doesn't, so the political messages are, you know, the impact of those is horrible, but every time I go on Facebook, and I keep a lot of the filters off just so I can see how bad it is, the amount of stuff that's there that is just crap is truly mind-boggling, and it filters to the top because it's inflammatory and therefore inspires engagement.
So that's the algorithm, right?
That's the algorithm. That's,
and they don't, you know, tell you how they do it, but isn't that their business? I mean, isn't that what they should be optimizing for is more users, more engaged users? Isn't that...
it's not engaged users. It's whoever screams the loudest and gets the most attention. So I don't know about you, but if we walk into, you know, an Amtrak station somewhere and there's, a crazy guy standing there screaming at the top of his lungs that the world is ending at 10:59
You walk the other way in real life, right?
But that's the guy who's going to get the most engagement, you know, that's almost literally the way that it's working right now. The people who can craft their message, there's no incentive to have a fact-based message on Facebook. In fact, a fact-based message on Facebook is going to be drowned out by the sensational ones that make misleading claims.
And ultimately, it sounds like that's not good for Facebook, right? I mean, at some point, people are just going to throw up their hands and say, I can't use this crap.
Well, I don't know. They're, you know, both Twitter and Facebook have business models that are based on monthly active users. I mean, it's like television. You know, there's a lot of really insane reality shows out there that involve people screaming at each other.
More a comment on us, the Facebook users? Isn't this what we want? This is what Facebook's giving us what we want.
That's an easy way to deny responsibility for something that's a major that has turned out to be a major influence on the civic discourse. Well, hey, we're just giving you what you want.
Do they have a higher responsibility? I mean, In-N-Out doesn't feed you broccoli either. I mean, do they have a higher responsibility?
I think that it comes down to how easy we will be swayed into our belief systems. I think that we really think that we're going to be above that and we're going to be able to look at things really reflectively and analytically. But when there's fear-based messages on either side of whatever we're dealing with, that really makes closed-mindedness of our mind. And so these messages do have an effect and sway popular opinion, even in ways that we may not believe that we would be able to be swayed by.
But you're asking Facebook to do something against its better business interests, aren't you?
Yes.
And you feel like they have a civic responsibility to do that.
It's a toxic.
I think that they do.
Yes, toxic product.
Yeah. Twitter, same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Brian, you have an opinion on all this?
Yeah, I mean, like Facebook especially, though, like it's become one of the main ways that people consume information, especially the news. And I think they do have a higher responsibility than other companies when it comes to making sure that people access accurate information and are hearing it from legitimate accounts. I'd like to see them personally do a better job at verifying that accounts are real. It sounds like they're taking some steps, but sounds like they're still falling short.
It's not that there's news out there that people disagree with. It's that they're gaming the system in order to make things trending that are not something that is a swaying of public opinion. They're creating what we think is public opinion. And because of that, that creates a wave of us wanting to be a part of it. We are innately tribalists, and we want to be a part of the winning tribe. And so if we see a lot of information that is swaying one way, and that's why there's so many fake accounts, is because then they can make things trending that slowly our cognitive dissonance will be broken down and we will want to become part of that opinion. And so they're actually just manipulating the system in order to see something. This is Orwellian in every stage.
Thursday, the Pew Center, which comes out with these great surveys and tells us a lot about how Americans use the internet, came out with a new survey that said about a quarter of all U.S. adults get news from two or more social media sites. One quarter, that's up from 15% in 2013, 18% in 2016. But get this, this is the one. Just under half, 45% of U.S. adults, 45% of U.S. adults use Facebook for news. Half of Facebook's news users get news from that social media site alone, with just one in five relying on three or more sites for news. So not right. only is Facebook dominant, you know, the source of news for many people, it's for many people the only source of news. That is where they get their news.
Right. And Georgia was right on. I want to add one thing to that, which is that in addition to putting out a message that people may or may not believe, there's two additional effects that you get from the onslaught of just pure deceptive messaging going out on a variety of topics. Number one is it creates the uncertainty in people's minds that say, well, I keep hearing this.
Yeah, must be true.
So,
yeah.
So there must be some kernel of truth
smoke,
underneath
fire.
It.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. And the second thing is, even if you can't get that reaction from people, the Russian trolls in particular, and you know, in certain political arms, are incentivized to just break people down to the point where they throw up their hands and say, I'm not going to be involved in this. This is just everyone's ugly. Everyone's screaming. Everyone's yelling. I don't believe a thing. And so they just tune out and they choose not to participate in the civic process. They choose not to believe that there is one side that's right and one side that's wrong. And there's value in gathering facts and finding out what that is. Instead, there are the external trolls coming from the outside are just as happy to turn us, you know, if they can convince 2% of the voters to just not go to the polls, they've won.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's an actual physical effect that happens when you hear enough negative content. It's that you're the part of your brain, your prefrontal cortex, the part that actually analyzes consequences to action, starts to shut down. And when that happens, you want to just avoid it because it's damaging to the system. It's actually painful for us to hear too much negativity. And so, like, in the end, they would just pit people against each other. So there's already been analysis of the different ads that were there, and they were really just trying to create fights so that people would be angry and not want to be a part of things. So what Ed is saying is completely right, and it's damaging to discourse, to being able to discuss things, to have differing opinions, because they're trying to polarize people. And we're really easy to create our own tribes of people, and you can see it with fights between Android and Apple and different sports teams. We are made to do that. It was very beneficial to us when we worked in tribal groups because we would keep our tribe protected. But now that we really have no tribe, we still have that innate want to be part of a tribe, and it's easy to demonize the us and them.
Yeah. I would submit that what really has happened here is there's a much larger pattern, a much larger game afoot, which is that one of the side effects of technology, big data, computation, is that companies have gotten very good at optimizing for engagement. This is something brand new. They've just gotten incredibly good, too good at optimizing for engagement. That's one. And by the way, it's a capitalist society. If optimizing for engagement returns more dollars, they're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Two, along come actors, Russia's just one of them, who see this as an opportunity. They understand what's going on, and they say, hey, this is great. We can seed confusion and dissent and ultimately complete apathy by just taking advantage of these things. And it's not just Facebook, but let's use Facebook as an example, by taking advantage of Facebook. And it seems to me almost an inevitability when you get to the point where you have a capitalist system and you have technology that is able to do this, that this is going to happen. And I don't know what the antidote is. The interesting article in the New York Times, How to Fix Facebook, Farhad Manjoo and Kevin Roos, who I really admire, asked some smart people And, you know, to what do we do about this? And there aren't a lot of solutions. Kevin Kelly said reduce anonymity, provide real verification. I this is a challenge because we all acknowledge that there's a reason for anonymity. There's a need for an ability to be a whistleblower or, you know, to talk freely without verification of your identity. And at the same time, that's become a very damaging thing. They asked a congressman from Silicon Valley, and he says, we need more transparency. Facebook needs to tell us how the algorithm works. They're never going to do that. They should make their executives readily available to the press and Capitol Hill. Bad actors want to take advantage of technology platforms, but the key is for Facebook to be upfront about the challenges, open about its mistakes, and willing to answer the tough questions. Eli Pariser, who wrote The Filter Bubble, I thought this was an interesting idea, said Facebook should allow independent researchers to study. He says right now Facebook's a black box. He says there is, of course, a challenge to opening private data to research, but there are ways to do this, and it would help. It'd be helpful to understand what's going on. It would be a bold move for transparency and one that would help us understand much better what's going on. Facebook employee, I can go on and on. I don't want to. There's quite a few people. Tim Wu, who wrote a number of really important books, coined the term net neutrality. His latest is The Attention Merchants. He says Facebook should become a public benefit corporation. That's kind of what you're suggesting, Ed, is that they should stop being a for-profit entity and be responsible for the problem they have created?
Oh, well, I wish that we could reduce the problem and the solution down to, a 15-second soundbite like that. But unfortunately, the original sin happened years ago when Facebook turned from its original model of being a way to connect people and the groups, originally colleges and universities, and then it became, employers and communities and such, local cities and such. But they made a very conscious decision to become a news publisher, and that has been tremendously lucrative for them monetarily, but that's where everything went off the rails. And without being able to rewind the tape and go back to that point and start over again, I don't think that there is an easy solution.
Actually, Facebook just recently said we're going to stop publishing. This is more of a revenue thing than anything else. We're going to stop allowing news publications to get into the feed unless they pay for it.
Yeah.
So maybe
funny
that's
how that happens.
Yeah. Now that we own you, it's going to cost you. Is it just Facebook? I mean, Twitter's doing this, but not to the same damaging degree.
It's not as popular.
If we forced Facebook to fix itself, wouldn't somebody else come along and say, hey, well, now that Facebook's not doing it, we should do this?
No, but if they put, and I don't want to say the word legislate, but I am, but if they put legislations in place where they had to be accountable,
you can't,
for the
free speech.
You know what, though? There comes a point where your free speech is actually causing damage to other people, and that's where free speech should end. And again, I'm from Canada, so yes, we're kind of a democratic, socialistic nation, but you shouldn't be able to push hatred. And these are lies. This isn't even free speech. These are bots that are putting out media in order to change.
I understand that.
Opinion.
And you could sanction accounts.
People.
But if you tell Facebook you can't do this, that is getting in the way of their rights.
I have
to
another
do that.
Idea to it, which again may completely not work. And I think that this would change one of the reasons why Facebook is so popular. But if you had, like, you know, before you're going to post something like a CAPTCHA or something that happens so that you could prove that you are not a bot, at least it would slow down the percentage of bots that were out there pumping out information and then, you know, liking it so that it becomes trending. There has to be something that is a check in place, because people can talk about what they want. But there shouldn't be mass-produced waves of differing opinions that are there just to incite negativity in another country so that then you can kind of take over the pieces. Because when we fight among ourselves, we become weaker, and then that works out great for rival nations. And that could be anyone.
Facebook's not an American. It's based in America, but these companies are Google, Facebook, Amazon. These aren't American companies. These are global companies.
Fair. But again, what I'm saying is that it's not freedom of speech, because this is not someone's personal opinion. We're talking about a whole bunch of bots that one organization or many is controlling to sway opinion.
But
it should be under a different set of legislation.
Isn't there a great risk of unintended consequences, though, if there were? I don't have any faith that legislation could be written that would control this without having serious impacts on things like the First Amendment.
Should a computer, though, have the First Amendment rights that a person does?
Right. So there's an interesting thing, legal issue going on here. Facebook wants to claim that it is simply a neutral publisher, that if people, or what appear to be people on the service, are putting ideas out there, they can't be held responsible for them because they're simply providing a platform for them to for them to promulgate those ideas. The problem is that exception came about a long time ago when there was a significant cost associated with promulgating ideas. You had to own a printing press. You had to have people who would carry your newspapers out there. So yes, you could put fake news out there, but it came at a fairly high cost. Facebook's marginal cost for putting a new post out is essentially zero. And their economic incentive for putting hundreds of thousands of posts out, you know, per minute, is extremely high. So at some point you have to resolve this issue. Are they a part of the process? Are they responsible for the messages coming out there, especially when they're algorithmically determining which messages you and I see? Or are they if they're truly going to be a neutral publisher, the way newspapers used to be, then, you know, they need to just like eliminate the algorithms completely. I think it's an untenable point of view.
And to expand on Ed's comment about how they have an incentive to have as many posts as possible, I also think that tech companies have been too complacent about allowing bots to exist. You know, like I can even look at my Instagram, which used to have 2,000 followers, and I don't know that many people. You know, they're mostly bots. Twitter, probably a lot of bots. Facebook, lots of bots trying to add me all the time. And I think there's been very little done in terms of getting rid of these bots because it makes them look good. It makes it look like they have more users that they can report to their investors every quarter. So I definitely think it's something that has not been addressed. And we were talking about potential solutions. I think if you look at a social network like Nextdoor, they do this really interesting thing where they send you a postcard with the code to make sure they're sending a postcard to a real person with a mailing address before you could use the service. You know, there's plenty of things that can be done that aren't being done yet by Facebook, Twitter, and different social media companies that I wish would be more pursued.
And didn't they also like clamp down on other I think that this one was Ashley Madison. But anyways, they had a whole bunch of bots posing as females.
That's right.
That weren't true. Right. And they actually had to say, listen, these are lies. And so people are joining it, which is actually a lie. And because of that, they were fined for it and then said that they would, you know, get rid of it. And then there was like three females on the entire site. But that's a different story for a different time.
It's kind of hard to set up dates if you only have 3 women and 8 million men. But
those 3 women did very well.
They did
though.
Very well.
So it's the same thing that Twitter and Facebook are doing is their proponent lies because it's pads their numbers, which works out well for them. But in the end, you know, I don't like to think that person that's writing to me is a lie.
There's clearly a benefit to padding your numbers. But is it easy to detect bots and kill them? Would that be technically is it something
There's no
we should demand of Twitter and Facebook because it's easy? They could do it.
They could do it. I don't think that they want to, because then we notice that, you know, half of my, everyone gets upset when suddenly, like, I suddenly lose, like, I don't know, 500 right. followers. I'm sad.
Well, so. And they like saying we have 2 billion monthly active users. What if it's only right, 8 billion?
Right.
That's a big
it's a
deal.
Big difference. To
yeah.
It,
so.
Well, there was a story this week, and I wish I had thought to provide the link for this one, but a former employee of Twitter.
Oh, I have
who
it.
Was in charge of security. If you've got that one handy, good.
Killed Donald Trump's account for 11 minutes.
No, not that one.
Not that
no,
one.
No.
Oh,
no,
okay.
No. Not that one. This was actually the senior employee at Twitter who was in charge of security and had some outside researchers come to him, I think, and said, look, we see a lot of activity that appears to be from bots here. And so they went back into, you know, with full access to Twitter's internal data and said, holy crap, you're right. Brought this over to management at Twitter and to the engineering side at Twitter. And their response was, and I quote, stay in your lane.
Yeah.
That's the mm-hmm. and that ultimately is something that I tweeted this week, which is all of the things that are going to fix social media are profoundly against the economic self-interests of yeah. the companies of Very the companies that are running those services. Yeah. So it's in their self-interest right. to take small measures that appear to be mm-hmm. doing something, to apply a blizzard of Band-Aids to the problem without actually affecting the underlying, you know, broken compound fractures.
The employee, Leslie Miley, discovered a vast amount of, this is from Bloomberg, of Twitter accounts with IP addresses in Russia and Ukraine in early 2015. He said most of them were inactive or fake, but weren't deleted. Miley was the engineering manager of product safety and security. He said efforts to root out spam and manipulation on the platform were slowed down by the company's growth team, which focused on increasing users and revenue. This is the quote, anything we would do that would slow down signups, delete accounts, or remove accounts had to go through the growth team, and they were more concerned with growth numbers than fake
Bingo.
And compromised accounts. That's a smoking yeah. gun. That's yeah, something right. Congress can say, oh, okay.
And that goes back to my point, which is that is the kind of person who should have been sitting in the chair in front of Congress. It shouldn't have been yes. a lawyer. It shouldn't have been mm-hmm. a CEO. It should have been an engineer who can speak in plain English about the things that they, under oath, with no ability to take the Fifth Amendment and say, you know, here's exactly what's happening. That person, I hope, is being subpoenaed to go testify before a future committee. But that's where we're actually going to learn things.
Although I have to think that the Russian troll farms are smart enough not to use Russian IP addresses when creating accounts.
Well, they actually, if you go back and look at that, you'll find they use VPNs and they use various forms of obfuscation to appear to make themselves look legitimate. But the nature of this kind of activity is they're always going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And when they make a mistake, I saw somebody who did an analysis of the Guccifer 2.0 personality on Twitter. I was reading this article today. This is the Twitter account that was responsible for the first dump of the DNC Podesta emails from last year. And they were able to go back using a variety of tools to find, and they discovered that the Guccifer 2.0 account was originally created in Russia, and that there was a period there where it was looking surprisingly French. Because guess what? A French election was coming up just a few months later.
Wow.
And so they found that this, you know, supposedly free-thinking, you know, account that is working on the behalf of the free citizens of the world, was they found pretty damning evidence that this was created in Russia and was designed to influence first an election in the United States and then an election in France.
I get a little bit worried, though, about pat solutions to this, like, oh, well, Twitter just could have blocked these and they just didn't because it wasn't there in their interest, or oh, the election went one way because Russia got involved. I worry that those they feel too easy and pat. And I don't feel like there. I feel like there's an underlying problem that's deeper than looking for Russian IP addresses or searching for mistakes from Guccifer. Won't these guys just become more sophisticated and use other tools?
Let's make them work for it.
Exactly.
That doesn't mean don't.
We shouldn't make it easy. I guess you're right.
Why, like, you know, people still rob banks.
Yeah. Right. But don't make it easy. Don't leave the safe open.
Don't leave the keys in the safe.
Yeah. All right. But, all right. I like this. It just feels like we're stymied, not because the solutions aren't there. But there's just the same problems that these fake accounts created continue to keep us from fixing it.
I think that people also don't know how easily we are influenced. I think that that needs to become media savvy has to be something that is taught to our children in school of how do you consume media when someone's trying to influence you by their talks. I think that this would also help people not be influenced by salesmen and, you know, get a better, you know, amount on there when they buy a car. Like, we need to be taught these type of dealings right from when we're really young. How can you tell when you're trying to be persuaded, and when is someone trying to use a fear tactic on you, and what are these different tactics that they use? I think that would help. I think that would help a lot, but it has to happen at a really young age. And we don't.
Well, you start by telling people don't get your news from Facebook only.
But that's what people like, though.
I know.
People like
it's easy
to hear news that of what we already feel, right? Yeah. We don't like to hear news that's going to be from different, like, you know, oh, I don't want to hear this news from here. So then that makes me safe. But the problem is, if it's polarized news, I become more and more leaning to whichever way I already leaned. So we're already innately made to do that.
And here's the even worse thing, is that there was a lot of focus in the congressional hearings on advertisements, but that's the wrong place to be looking. The ads are not the problem. Those were almost a sideshow for the whole thing. A lot of this was engagement from accounts that appear to be real people, activists, you know, legitimate experts in an area. The Blacktivist account, which had 350,000 followers or so. And the way that the process gets most toxic is when one of those non-paid messages gets out there and then is amplified by your friends. When your friends are sharing things with you, you tend to believe it more than if it's an ad sitting in the sidebar that's labeled as an ad. Right. And that's the real thing. All the you know, if they have 200 million fake accounts, all they have to do is create a handful of stars out there that can have a couple hundred thousand followers and start pushing a message out that then gets, you know, they tell two friends, and each one of those two friends tells two friends, and so on and so on, the way the old commercial used to go. You get a multiplier factor on that is just unbelievable and frankly unbearable when the message that you're starting out with is toxic.
But the problem is, it's so easy to manipulate human beings, and we just fall right into those traps. And these companies have just gotten better and better and better at doing it. And whether Facebook's doing it or they're merely a conduit to others doing it, they're somewhat complicit together, because Facebook's made it better and easier for them to do it, and they want the engagement, they want the bots, so there's an economic incentive for them.
And you know what the way to heal that is, so that we're not as inclined to go into tribalism.
Turn off Facebook.
That you could do that. many people are still going to be influenced by media. If it is not Facebook, it could be something else. But we found that people, if they're happy, if they're doing good things for themselves, if they're dealing with their anxiety, these different things will lessen our need to be susceptible. We are most susceptible when we are scared, when we are worried, when we are angry. And so, you know, just doing things for yourself, taking care of yourself, will make you less susceptible to polarizing news. And in the end, that's what we want. We want everyone to kind of come together. We are, you know, as a nation, to be able to make good change so that everyone lives better lives. And that's by listening to each other, not by shutting out one group or another.
It's so sad to me, because really the hope at the beginning, and I've mentioned this before, of all of this, of the internet, of Facebook, of Twitter, of Google, was that it would ultimately democratize speech. Everybody would get a chance to have a voice, that people would be heard, that, you know, the oligarchs would no longer control the media. And it's just really backfired terribly. It's not worked out like anybody. Ed, you and I were at the beginning of the internet. We remember those days, and I was very hopeful. I thought the internet's going to be an amazing transformation.
Well, you know, today's the fifth. So it was 3 days ago was the 29th anniversary of the first worm on the internet.
The Morris worm.
The Morris worm. That was, I think it was November 2nd, 1988.
The first worm in the apple.
And that was sort of, you know, you saw that happen, and all these people who invented the internet that had these amazing capabilities to it. And there was one guy saying there, you know, all it takes is somebody with some bad intent to go in and completely hijack this, like this. And then 4 or 5 years later, you had email, you had spam taking over what had been wonderful email, and that was over. And then you had advertisements that were taken over by malware.
Yeah.
I think the lesson of the internet, for as long as it has been available to the public, has been whatever you fall in love with is going to turn to crap really quickly.
And yet, the great hope of the internet is still there, because you do have access to all the world's information. You do, if you want to, you can find out what's going on, right? But you have to want to. You have to. I agree with Georgia. I agree that media literacy is important. You have to understand that there are facts and then there are non-facts, and how to distinguish the two. But if you wanted to, the internet still is potentially hugely valuable.
Keep it. It's
wonderful, but that doesn't mean that it's perfect.
No. Well, it's far from it. You know what's not perfect? Humans. That's the problem.
Yes. That's some of the best of us, though, is our humanity.
Let's take a break. Great conversation. Brian X. Chen is here from the New York Times, lead consumer technology writer there. We have, of course, the fabulous Georgia Dow. You can go to her. She's a psychotherapist as well as a senior editor at iMore.com, and her anxiety videos at anxiety-videos.com are really useful for people who want to sleep better, who want to reduce anxiety. You could have better relationships, have a better life. I wish you would do a media literacy video, Georgia.
We've thought about that, actually, about that, and also, you know, about, you know, when you raise your kids and what media should they have
access
to at what times, and
parenting
things as
is
well.
Important.
So,
Maybe we should, we should do more about this. Maybe we could do something.
That would be great.
That. Yeah. I have to think about that. Ed Bott's also here, the Ed Bott Report on ZDNet. Great to have all three of you. Our show today brought to you by, I wish I'd spent more time last night, but the stupid fall back thing. But I had a nice mattress to lie on my Casper. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. They were the first to really do this, to break the hold, the grip of the mattress middleman. These people, these mattress stores, they mark it up 100%. They hard sell you. You can go direct to the source. You go to Casper, cut the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms, and the savings are passed right on to you. But now there's a problem, and the Casper immediately pinpointed this. People think they want to lie on the mattress before they buy the mattress. they think they need to go to that showroom. But I think it's pretty clear you don't learn anything from lying on a mattress for 5 minutes in broad daylight with the salesperson looking at you, your shoes on. You can't tell. How about this? How about this? Get the Casper mattress and then decide. You have 100 nights to sleep on your Casper and then decide. Casper mattresses combine multiple supportive memory foams for a sleep surface with just, it's kind of a paradox, but they do it, just the right sink so your hard bits get, you know, comfortably supported, but also just the right bounce. So you're back wake in the morning, you feel great. And I have to say, very important, it's breathable design, sleeps cool. And I know you know this, Georgia, sleeping cool is very important to having a good night's sleep. You don't want to sleep hot, and Casper mattress is the best. And it provides long-lasting comfort and support. You can buy it online, and there's absolutely no risk. Now, I just got the new Casper mattress, the Wave, which features a natural geometry support system, a new top layer. It's a little more expensive, but I have to say, I like it even more. Free shipping, free returns to the U.S., Canada, and the U.K. You get your choice. The original Casper, it's what I sent my kids to college with. And you know what's great? After 4 years, they just left it there because it was affordable. And they said, the next kid's going to get a nice mattress. Free delivery. Return. You have 100 days to return it. If you say at any point in that first 100 days, or I should say 100 nights, you say, I don't want it, they will come. They will get it. They will refund every penny. You've got nothing to lose. They come in a very compact box. You open it up. They suck up all the air, and they suddenly fluff out. There is no smell. I don't know how they do this. They do not smell. They just smell great, fresh. I've had mattresses you had to air them out for weeks before you wanted to sleep on them. Not the Casper. Get a Casper mattress today. And by the way, we're going to save you an additional $50 by going to casper.com/twit. All you have to do is use the promo code TWIT, T-W-I-T, at checkout. casper.com/twit. $50 towards your mattress purchase when you use the promo code TWIT. Terms and conditions apply. Get a great night's sleep on your Casper mattress. Really nice. And by the way, I'm going to say it again because maybe it didn't sink in. Yes, the U.S., but they also ship to Canada and the U.K. I know we have a lot of U.K. listeners who've heard us talk about this who are saying, all right. By the way, Mitch McConnell yesterday said that he thinks tech giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter could help the United States retaliate against Russian forces, but he's skeptical of efforts to regulate political ads. This was on the Hugh Hewitt show. So when you get the leader of the Senate, or is he this? He's a Republican leader of the Senate saying, well, yeah, but maybe not. Asked about the absence of Mark Zuckerberg at the testimony, he said that was not good. He said the tech industry ought to be more interested in cooperating when you have a clear law enforcement issue, more interested in cooperating with law enforcement than they have been. Now, I can't disagree with this. What we ought to do with regard to the Russians is seriously retaliate against the Russians. This is great. Let's have a war with Russia over Facebook, and these tech terms could be helpful in giving us a way to do that. I despair, frankly, that Congress will ever understand what the issues are and will ever make a law that makes any sense. In fact, I worry that anything that they do will actually be counterproductive. It's like encouraging Facebook to wage war against Russia. What?
Not even a slippery slope, though. I mean, that's a greased slide all the way to hell.
Well, we talked a couple of weeks because basically
what you're asking is for what are supposed to be global technology companies, global communication networks, to be temporarily co-opted by the government of one country, which may or may not be run by people who have the interests of the global community at large. And the idea that the government, that the United States government should be taking over a social media company and using it to attack their enemies. I mean, that's what the president's Twitter account is for.
Which, by the way, as we mentioned, was shut down for 11 minutes. Turns out it was a Twitter employee. He was on the way out. It was his last day, and he said, I wonder if I can do this. And he killed the account. Of course, Twitter's government and elections team immediately reinstated it. But it raises the bigger issue. Well, just any, you know, customer service guy could turn off anybody's account. Can he tweet on your behalf? Twitter said, no. They can't tweet on the president's behalf. And then they said, and now we're going to put in controls about who can delete who. But boy, that was
getting a letter of recommendation.
Yeah.
Well, someone's put them up on the internet for Nobel Peace Prize.
I wonder if we'll ever know who this was. And while this poor person will, of course, get lots of hate, this poor person will also get lots of job offers. So it's an interesting. I'm not sure I'd want to hire somebody who would do that. But at the same time, I can understand the impulse.
The funniest thing about Congress asking to use Facebook against another country is probably the first thing, if you are thinking to do that, is not to say you're going to do that, because that kind of defeats the purpose.
Let's make some American bots spread some fake news.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that's what we should do. Yeah. Oh, they don't have do they have elections in Russia still? I guess they do, but nobody counts the votes, so I don't know. Hey, T-Mobile, Sprint. Merger's off, merger's on. Now the merger's definitely off. The last thing I saw, unless it's changed again, is on T-Mobile's page. No, we're giving up on talks. So there was an effort to get them back together again, but T-Mobile and Sprint will not join together. I think that's probably a good thing. I think more carriers is better than fewer carriers.
Well, and also, how does the old saying goes, two turkeys don't make an eagle?
Oh, I was going to say that. Yeah.
I like T-Mobile.
Maybe to it.
All right.
I mean, I think you're right. You know, like having more is better. Like historically, it's always been shown that with telecommunications companies, especially, or utilities companies, whenever there have been mergers, historically, it's shown that there have been fewer jobs, prices have risen for consumers, et cetera, et cetera. So all the historical data just shows that this is the right thing for the industry.
But in the United States, don't we effectively have a duopoly with Verizon and AT&T? I mean, collectively, when you combine their two market shares, I haven't looked lately, so I'm not going to guess what the number is. But the last time I looked, it was the vast majority. Sprint was a very small number, and T-Mobile was a small number. And when you combine a small number and a very small number, you usually wind up with a small number. And so the fact of having a bunch of little gnats in the market, I'm not sure that that's really the way that you get competition is by reducing the share of the two companies that make up the duopoly, so that the companies that are third and fourth and fifth and sixth out there have a legitimate shot at winning over customers.
The T-Mobile and Sprint merger would create a company that is third after AT&T and Verizon. So you're absolutely right. It wouldn't even gain market share. It'd be just... Okay.
I don't think we can even change it at this point because it comes down to wireless spectrum, right? The licenses for the spectrum. And now we're really going into the weeds here, right? But like AT&T and Verizon own the vast majority of spectrum, I think about 80% of spectrum in the United States. Whereas, you know, if the two combine, then they would still have nothing to use to build a greater network, a bigger network. Right. So there's really no point in combining the two companies.
Of course, Masayoshi Son, who was at one time, the owner of ZDNet, as I remember, or was it Ziff Davis?
He owns Ziff Davis.
Yeah. Has what, $100 billion to spend on Sprint? He acquired a bunch of Sprint. So maybe Sprint will, I don't know, maybe they can buy some spectrum. I don't know. I am no expert on geopolitical issues or how Saudi Arabia is run, but weirdly, Al-Waleed bin Talal, who is a billionaire and one of the early investors in Twitter and Apple, owns huge stakes in both, was arrested yesterday.
He also is the majority stockholder in Fox News.
Oh, really? I did not know that. Yes. Not Murdoch. Al-Waleed.
Well, he's the largest
outside the family.
largest external shareholder in the company.
11 princes, 4 ministers, and tens of former ministers were detained. This is all a succession issue. I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine he's living in a prison cell. They have accused him, though, with money laundering, bribery, and extorting officials.
They have turned the Ritz-Carlton. This is not a joke. This is not a joke. They have turned the Ritz-Carlton into the prison for the Saudi princes.
Wow.
Who have been arrested as part of this power consolidation.
There's a succession coming. The king is going to be succeeded by his son, the crown prince. But there are power plays going on, and I guess these this arresting these proactively eliminates any contention over the succession. That's my understanding of it. And but I don't. Anyway, I don't know what the outcome will be of this. But it kind of sent a shock through Silicon Valley. He's a big investor. In Silicon Valley. Sad news: the California wildfires burnt. Some pretty important historical records, the papers of the kind of the founders of Silicon Valley, William Hewlett and David Packard. So an HP company is up in the Santa Rosa area. It was called Agilent. They were a spinoff, and then they became Keysight. And Keysight somehow got custody of these papers, which had been stored in a fireproof safe and so forth, and instead just put them in a shed where they burned up. They had been assessed at a value in 2005 of $2 million. They had previously kept in special flame retardant lined vaults, but I guess nobody cared. Keysight said, well, you just put them in that shed over there. And of course, this is from an era when stuff wasn't kept electronically, so these are the only copies of those papers. Kind of sad. We had a taste test of the Android burger, and I don't remember who won. Apparently, Google actually serves its hamburgers with the cheese on the bottom. And that's why the Google emoji is strangely drawn. Remember earlier this week, Sundar Pichai tweeted, we're going to drop everything we're doing and on Monday address this significant burger emoji issue. No word if they actually did. But then others pointed out, hey, forget the fact that you got the cheese on the bottom. That's nothing compared to the beer stein emoji. The beer is apparently floating in Google's beer stein. Actually, the head is floating. The beer doesn't go all the way up to the top. It's just wrong all around. And I don't know who's doing Google's emojis, but obviously they've had too much beer and cheeseburgers.
They've never eaten a cheeseburger. You can't put the cheese on the bottom. Heat rises. The cheese has to melt. It has to be on the patty.
That's what we discovered yesterday. It was impossible to get the cheese to melt because it was on the bottom by the bun.
It doesn't work. A bun is cold.
So there you have it. I don't know. There's much more to say that. As long as we're in emoji land.
Right. Apple wins the burger.
Apple is a very nice burger. Yeah. That's why I bought an iPhone 10.
$1,000. Yeah,
I had to have the right emoji. And apparently, there's a battle raging in Unicode. Now we've had the Unicode guys on the subcommittee members, the emoji subcommittee. Jeremy comes by once in a while to talk about the new emojis. There is a big battle over the poop emoji. They want to make the poop emoji is a happy one. It's smiling. Some feel anyway. There should be a frowning poop emoji. Others say, enough with the poo. We don't need a frowning emoji. This is a vicious, as is always the case with things that make absolutely no difference. This is a vicious battle.
You know, this is a slippery slope, though, Leo. Because after you get the sad one, frowning one, then they're going to say, we want colored
emojis. You know, where's the white poop emoji? I ask you.
And resting poop face.
Resting poop face? Oh, yes, my God.
This is how we should fix fake news on Facebook. We'll have people rate with emojis how much how accurate and inaccurate things are with sad emoji versus happy face poop emoji. problem solved. Yeah.
I thought this was kind of interesting. There is Motherboard published an article, the Vice site, which is a very good site, and I have to credit the author of the article, Christopher Malmo, with doing some mathematics, came up with a kind of not exactly an accurate headline. One Bitcoin transaction now uses as much energy as your house in a week. But what he did was he divided the total amount of energy Bitcoin miners estimated to use, about 24 terawatts of electricity a year, by the 300,000 Bitcoin transactions a day, and came up with 215 kilowatt hours used for each Bitcoin transaction. But of course, the transactions don't use it, but the miners do.
Right.
And it is kind of remarkable that Bitcoin mining, now, of course, it's not economical if the power costs anything or much. So a lot of Bitcoin miners are next to hydroelectric dams in China, for instance, where power is either free or cheap. Nevertheless, 24 terawatts of hours of electricity a year to basically do meaningless math computations to generate more Bitcoin. I don't know. Maybe Satoshi Nakamoto wanted to create a climate crisis. I don't. It's odd.
Seems worth it for $7,000 a coin.
That's what the miners said.
How much is your electricity bill a week?
Yeah.
$20?
I would do it. In Mongolia, there's a coal-powered Bitcoin mine. Coal-powered. So the estimate is that that single mine is responsible for 8,000 to 13,000 kilograms of CO2 emissions for every Bitcoin it mines. Is Bitcoin an environmental nightmare? Who cares? Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
Not sure people care if they're making sense.
I didn't know if that was rhetorical or you were actually asking.
No, it's rhetorical. It's rhetorical. Here's some good news. Equifax convened a special committee. Remember, of course, Equifax had a data breach. What was it? 142 million records exfiltrated by hackers. All of us, probably. And weirdly, 3 days after the data breach was discovered, Equifax executives sold their stock. But hey, here's the good news. The special committee's been convened, and they said, no, that wasn't insider trading. So
that's good.
Yeah, I'm relieved.
I feel better now.
Four good senior executives sold
You're
shares.
You're winning, sir.
Yes, just days after workers discovered the Equifax breach. It wasn't insider trading. It was just coincidence. $1.8 million of stock. It was just coincidence. The committee interviewed dozens of people. It says it right here. Reviewed 55,000 emails, text messages, and phone logs. It was an appropriate trade. That's a reassuring, says Equifax's non-executive chairman, Mark Fiedler. Shares of Equifax fell 0.8% in pre-market trading.
As the saying goes, he would say that.
Yes, he would. I love it. We had a committee. It was a red ribbon committee. Blue ribbon committee. Let's take a break. We'll say goodbyes and final words in just a bit. Our show brought to you by Stamps.com. If you do any mailing at all, you've got to stop going to the post office and do what the pros do. Use Stamps.com so you can do everything you would do at the post office at Stamps.com. Of course, it starts with buying and printing. This is kind of magical. You feel like John Dillinger. You can buy and print U.S. postage with your computer and your printer. It comes out of the printer. It's like legal postage. Of course, you pay for it. Not free, but that's cool. But it goes farther than that. It will print labels for packages. It'll print on envelopes. It's really professional looking. If you do mailing of any kind, do the professional thing. Don't be licking stamps and putting them on the brown paper and the twine and all that. Use stamps.com. It's easy. You can create your stamps account in minutes. There's no equipment. It's not a postage meter. There's nothing to lease, no long-term commitments. They will send you, though, some really cool stuff, including a digital scale that'll calculate the exact postage. No more guessing. Stamps.com helps you decide the best class of mail every time. It'll even suggest less expensive classes. You can get discounts you can't even get at the post office on express mail, things like that. Fills out the forms, too. If you've got customs forms, if you're mailing internationally, it fills them out for you. It takes the addresses from your address book. If you do mailing of any kind, but especially if you're an Amazon or Etsy or eBay seller, this is the way to do it. Stamps.com. Now, here's Here's the offer we're going to get you. You see right on there, $5 of free postage. Forget that. Don't go. That's the front page. That's for people who don't listen to the show. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. This is kind of magic, too. And enter TWIT as the promo code, okay? Did we say $5 in free postage? No, no, no. Try this. $55 in free postage, plus the scale, plus a trial of Stamps.com. That's $110 value. Free postage, kids. Just in time for your holiday cards. Stamps.com. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Get that four-week trial, plus the postage, plus the digital scale. No long-term commitment. Avoid the craziness. And, you know, the holidays are coming. That means the post office is going to be a zoo. Amateur hour. If you're a pro mailer, you got to use Stamps.com. And don't forget the offer code. TWIT. Brian, are you excited about the Razer phone?
I think I missed the news about the Razer phone.
What? You're a lead consumer technology writer. Well, maybe you weren't the only one. Razer had an announcement at... streamed it live on Twitch on November 1st. They announced a new phone. I don't want to say ugly, but the plainest phone ever, but a good price. It's an 835 Snapdragon 835 with a 5.7-inch LCD display, 120 hertz refresh rate. So this is kind of, Razer's a gaming company, so it's kind of gaming focused. 8 gigs of RAM. I don't know of any phone with more RAM. 64 gigs of storage plus the ability to support an SD card. Front-facing speakers with on the left and the right with Dolby Atmos. Android Nougat THX certification, and it's only $699, available in the U.S. November 17th. But I noticed a number of reviewers said, "Damn, that's ugly." It's basically just a square box. You know, there's nothing to it. Pretty impressive. Great for gaming.
I guess they would put down, "No one will steal it."
You know, it's utilitarian. And this comes, they bought, of course, Nextbit, the company that did the Robin phone, which actually, if you made this baby blue, it would look just like with the front-facing speakers and all. So I think they just incorporated features of the Robin phone. The Robin team is very good. A lot of them came from Android.
Also, I like that you said only $700.
Yeah, what a deal.
iPhone 10 has done to us.
Yes.
Oh, God.
It's cheap. Well, even the Note 8 is $930. I mean, that's, you know, although you
well,
could...
Well, but you have, you know, so you have a variety of lesser tier companies.
Yeah, Essential's phone is $500.
So Essential, yeah, I was about to bring up
phone.
Essential.
Yeah.
They built apparently a really nice phone, and it's tanking.
Yeah, it's very sad. They might get a second life because of the new pricing. They might get a second life.
You know, usually price cuts are what you do right before you get sold to somebody else. You know,
this is Andy Rubin's company, the guy who created Android, and they've had lots of stumbles. They're even being sued by a company who said you stole, you know, our technology for the Essential phone. But did you play with it, Brian?
No, I was out sick when they were giving out the review units, but I had stomach flu, I swear.
I can get you one if you want. They're cheap.
I heard that the camera wasn't good, right?
Oh, like, well, that's what an interesting story, because most people reviewed pre-production units, and the camera crashed, and I bought an Essential phone, as I do with all this stuff, and it crashed. The first time I launched the camera, the whole phone crashed. But within a week, they started pushing out updates. I think they pushed 3 or 4 updates. And now it's fine. It works great, but it's too late.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Too late. Everybody says the camera crashes. So that's the problem with pre-production units. They fixed it.
Parts.
Yeah. Well, it is, obviously. And it's not a great camera, I'll admit. It's not as good as the... Have you played with the Pixel 2 XL?
I was on vacation during that one.
Ryan, do you ever work? No, I know you just wait for the iPhone to come out, and that's when you come in. I understand. I don't blame you.
Hey, I do have the Samsung phone, though.
I'm teasing you. Microsoft says if you want to take advantage, I didn't even know you could still get it for free, Ed. What's the story here?
So it's an interesting thing that's going on here. You know, of course, Microsoft released Windows 10 in July of 2015, and they said free upgrades
Verizon
for everybody.
Google.
Oh, I'm sorry. Autoplay, I hate you. Okay.
God.
thank God the New York Times isn't doing that.
Oh, was that my? Is that CDNet?
That's yeah. CDNet. Yeah.
I hope my management is watching. So 1 year after the original launch, they said, okay, the free upgrade offer is over. But if you read the disclaimers on that, it said the free upgrade offer through the Get Windows 10 app is now ended. As it turns out today, if you have a PC that's running Windows 7 or Windows 8.1, you can just go out and download the Windows 10 code, install it, and boom, you get your free upgrade.
Does it authenticate?
Yes.
What?
They never take off the free upgrades. I've been writing about it. It's one of my most popular posts, has been for a year. You can still get the upgrade. And the part of the justification for that was that anyone who uses any kind of assistive technology, which could be as simple as the screen magnifier in Windows 10, is entitled to a free upgrade. There's no test. There's no qualifier.
Have to assert that you use assistive technologies? Don't even have to say it. You just do it.
You just download and do it. But that offer is officially, and that fig leaf for corporate buyers is officially ending as of December 31st of this year. So after that time, the question becomes, will Microsoft turn off the code on the activation servers that allows older PCs to upgrade for free, or will it just be just like before? Well, they'll still leave it running in the background, but this time there's no justification for it.
Wow, I had no idea. I got to read the Ed Bot report more often. I had no idea. That's awesome.
And
frankly, if you're using Windows, you're still using Windows 8, you should probably upgrade. That was horrible. That was a nightmare. 10's great. I don't mind 10 at all. I like 10 a lot. I'm using it right now with my Magic Surface Studio.
That thing's huge.
It's beautiful.
Beautiful.
It's a beauty. Yeah,
it's a beaut. Anything else? I think we can wrap it up. You guys have been. It's been a long, hard slog through tech news heaven.
I think we picked it up through the middle.
You
I
did. You it saved was, it. I thank you all of you.
All,
you guys are
I
amazing.
Think we're really working it then.
You were working it when we got to the Facebook thing. I was putting that off. I thought, oh, that won't be. And I was wrong. You guys, you were good. You are good. You're the best. Georgia Dow. Find her at imore.com. Of course, we get her on as often as we can. She's at the Twitter, @Georgia_Dow. And her day job as a psychotherapist is she's available to you through her website, anxiety-videos.com, where you can and actually you have downloads. You don't have to get a DVD, right?
You don't have to get a physical DVD.
I have the full set. I'm happy to say, but anxiety, panic, anything you want help with, boundaries and consequences. Is that for grown-ups or children?
Both, but mostly for adults. Like, it's just really about boundaries and consequences.
So maybe we should send this to Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey, people like that. Is that who it's for?
You know, you have to want to have healthy boundaries and consequences, so this may not help them.
I'm going home and watching it tonight.
Good. No, not because of that. I didn't.
No, I need it. I admit it.
If you're too nice to people, it is good to set healthy boundaries, or if people take advantage.
My favorite, and one of the reasons to get the DVD, my favorite cover is Get the Sleep You've Always Dreamt Of with a very restful baby on the front of that one. That baby's out. Is that stock photo or is that somebody you know?
No, that we found that photo, and actually it was Sandra that found that photo, and it's my favorite photo because that's showing what sleep really should be like.
It should look just like that. If babies could snore, that one would be snoring. That is nice. It's great to have you. Nice to see you, Georgia. Good luck
Thank
with the move.
So
good luck living in your mom's basement.
That'll be interesting.
With no internet.
Internet. I was going to say you should start a blog, but I guess with no internet, I guess.
Well, I have my phone. I'll still have my phone.
You can blog from your phone. Day 17. Brian X. Chen, your first time here. I hope it won't be your last. We really always love your stuff. At BX Chen on the Twitter. Lead consumer technology writer for the New York Times. Please come back anytime. It's really great to have you.
Oh, happy to. Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Yeah,
really, really fun. Wanted to get you on for ages, so I'm glad we finally did. And, of course, Ed Bott is always welcome. He's the guy who knows all, even tells all, the Ed Bott Report at ZDNet. And Ed Bott on Twitter. Thank you, Ed, for being here. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'll see you on Facebook, Leo.
No, you won't. I'm very proud to say, and it wasn't about any of this stuff we talked about, but I just realized I woke up one night and was on my phone, Georgia, you'd appreciate this, looking at Facebook. And I immediately deleted Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter from my phones.
Good for you.
I said, that's not
good
healthy.
For you. It's wonderful.
Well, I put Twitter and Instagram back, but Facebook's still gone.
Okay, I'm taking back the gold star. You only get half.
I can't live. Twitter, well, if you don't have Twitter on your phone and there's an earthquake, you don't know what to do. You have, Twitter is where you get news now, right? Or is that a bad idea? It's breaking news.
Well, it depends on how much you use it and how you feel when you use it. I still am on Twitter. It's just very rarely, and I don't usually listen to the news feed. So.
I have to say, I do not miss Facebook at all. And I would kill my account, except I need to, talk about it, report on it, so I have I can use it on a computer. But I have no urge to go there anymore. It's easy to break that habit. Everybody should do that.
Easy for some. I think that for other people, it's a really hard habit to break. It's made to be as addictive as possible. So
I don't have any friends or family, so
there's no. So then it makes it easy.
No temptation, not at all. No, the real truth is not my friend. I never see their posts. You know, it's all as you said. It's all the ginning up engagement stuff, and I don't. And that makes me feel bad. I don't want to see that.
Yeah,
I'll add you on Facebook, Leo.
No!
You have a friend.
Okay, we'll be friends. Okay, now I can go back. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We do this show every Sunday afternoon. Now, in California, in fact, the U.S. for the most part, except for a few rogue states, we've gone back to daylight. We've eliminated daylight saving time, and we've gone back to standard time, which is always a bad idea. And but we do it. We have to do it. And so we are still 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. But that means it's 2300 UTC instead of 2200. So 2300 UTC, you do the math, figure out what time we're on. You can watch us live, twit.tv/live. If you do that, please join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. It's fun to be like the kids in the back of the class. And I really value the chat room's contributions. You can also be in studio. We have some nice studio visitors from Woodbridge, Virginia, and Regina. Regina or Regina? Georgia, how do you say that?
Regina.
That's what I thought. Regina, Saskatchewan. I know how to say that. Canada. Nice to have you both. Actually, he lives here now, right? No, I'm confused. Never mind. He doesn't live here. And he doesn't want anybody to think he lives here. he's from Canada. By the way, when I travel, that's what I tell people. I'm Canadian. It's almost.
Say goodnight, Leo.
Thanks for joining us. See you next time. Another twit is in the can. Good night, Leo. Doing the twit.